miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, April 30, 2022. And welcome to the free range open air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are living in a synthetic reality. A reality that has been shaped and crafted by creatures who are fundamentally at war with the very essence of what it means to be human on this earth, and at war with nature and God the Father, God the Creator. And make no mistake, this is indeed a war. One of the most powerful aspects of any war is to control information, disinformation, and propaganda. And what we are seeing now is the ratcheting up of rhetoric against free speech. And this is why this new network, which is very aptly named Speak Free Radio, is so badly needed. And the timing of the creation of this network is really impeccable when you think about it. It's impeccable, guys. And, you know, anyone who embraces the idea of hate speech has already lost the war, guys. That's the reality of the situation. Make no mistake about that. And basically what you're doing is you're waving a white flag and begging for mercy without even knowing it. And the saddest part is you will be begging for mercy from people who intend to show you no quarter. That's right, no quarter. This is an all or nothing game, guys, for both sides. And speaking of hate speech, I was monitoring the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media this morning. And, you know, that is not a terribly enjoyable thing, but it is necessary from time to time just to sort of keep an eye on what they want us to think. And so I saw a brief interview, thank God, a brief interview with Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, guys. Where would this world be without that? And let me tell you guys, this guy has the vampiric Nosferatu look going in spades. I mean, seriously, if you were going to have a casting call for a vampire movie called Nosferatu, this guy would be at the top of the list. He really would. Yeah. And anyway, Mr. Greenblatt, the head of the ADL, of course, he was, you know, moaning on and on and on about the meteoric rise of anti-Semitic incidents over the last year, claiming that over 1,700 such incidents occurred in 2021, a 40% increase from the previous year. And that comes down to 7 incidents a day. 7 mini holocausts a day, guys. We can't go on like this. And of course, this man offered no evidence whatsoever to back up any of his claims, and nor was any asked, because, you know, the person interviewing this man was essentially worshiping him and just hanging on his every word. And it was Judy Woodruff of NPR, or you know, so it's not NPR, it's the PBS NewsHour. That's it, the PBS NewsHour. Sorry about that, guys. And basically, the words that came out of his mouth were etched in stone simply because he said it. And, you know, I expect these sort of claims to keep being made on an increasing level because it's becoming increasingly clear to more and more people from all walks of life that the international Jew has a reach that vastly exceeds their population, to say the least. That's an understatement. But that is becoming sort of, you know, obvious to many, many people from all walks of life, as well as the sort of pernicious influence over our civilization that these people have, and the rapacious desire to destroy Western civilization for all eternity. That's what we're dealing with, guys. And what's interesting is this Greenblatt character, he has the habit of revealing information that perhaps he shouldn't. And I've seen several interviews with this guy, and he does have a habit of sort of saying something that's a little off script, either knowingly or unknowingly, hard to say, because these are crafty creatures we're dealing with, guys. And so, anyway, after he finished his screed about all the anti-Semitic incidents, blah, 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 again, with no proof whatsoever, no proof, he started talking about China, of all things. Yes, he started talking about China and how there were hateful remarks made about China and China's policies. About China's policies. Think about that, guys. We're not talking about hateful remarks towards Chinese people necessarily. We're talking about the actual policies of the Chinese government. It's hateful to criticize that, guys. Do you see how dangerous this concept of hate really is? It can be applied to anything. Anything can become hate speech. If an international Jew in the position of authority deems it so. So here we're seeing that criticizing the policies of an openly dictatorial communist government, well, it's actually a hybrid system now. It's not truly communism. There's really no such thing as true communism. True communism will never be reached. It's the fantasy that all communists strive for that's impossible. Like chasing the green dragon, it's not going to happen. But it reveals that, you know, a faction of, let's say, higher up Jewish power have aligned themselves with China. And they are not only supportive of the Chinese system, they want to import it worldwide, and they don't want people criticizing it because it's hate, guys. They're hateful remarks. This is so dangerous. And really, if you think about it, anybody that believes in hate speech is not your friend. Think about that, guys. It's as simple as that. So yeah, they want to import this Chinese system worldwide, and Jonathan Greenblatt essentially came out and, you know, in a roundabout way, pledged his allegiance to that system because, hey, you can't criticize it. If you can't criticize it, you got to go along with it. Just lay back and let it happen, guys. Man. And I've been saying this for, what, 2 years since I started this show. And the Chinese system is the future if we allow it. That's what they want to bring to the world. In fact, something even worse than that, that's going to be based on the Chinese system. There's other elements that have not been revealed yet and other technologies they plan on invoking that people aren't aware of. Yeah, interesting comments here in the chat about Jonathan Greenblatt. Oh, some funny stuff, guys. I always appreciate the comments. I'm always looking at the chat room in Twitch and in Speak Free Radio and on our Chitango as well. So keep them coming, guys. It's just it's good to know that, you know, insightful, intelligent, and funny people are actually listening. So I do appreciate that very much. So yeah, guys, it's official. Criticizing China's policies is hateful. So the real reveal here is that anything can become hate speech, guys. That's the bottom line. So anyone who criticizes this absolutely insane zero COVID policy in China, which is, I can't believe anyone even buys that one for so many different reasons. If you lock down 23 million people, hey, don't criticize it because it's hate speech. That's how far this can go if people let it. And it really is, a lot of it really is, do we just sit back and let it happen or not? It's time to speak your mind, guys, without fear. And I hope everybody in you know, listening to this show does that in real life. Just start talking to people. I'm always surprised with how receptive people are now. It's not like years ago where you were crazy. I don't get that reaction very often anymore. It's really quite amazing. So yeah, the ADL has officially stated that they support Chinese policy because to criticize it is hateful. And it gives us a real insight that future lockdowns may indeed be coming. I mean, if they feel they can get away with it. Again, they're always looking to push the Overton window. And it's up to us if we are going to play that game again. I didn't play it the first time. And I certainly won't play it again. So we can have lockdowns here in America or in the West, or at least attempted ones, due to Marburg, this new awful disease where you start bleeding from every orifice in your body, supposedly. Or it could be bird flu, because right now, guys, there's a chicken holocaust going on as we speak. Millions of innocent birds are being holocausted because they supposedly tested positive for COVID. Bird flu. Yeah. Okay. Even though they seem healthy, they're asymptomatic chickens. We must exterminate the asymptomatic chickens. Or we could even have climate lockdowns. That's something that's actually been openly discussed by the minions, and I do mean minions, of the World Economic Forum and other associated entities. I think it's going to be whatever version of this is going to sell the best to the goyim cattle. That's what it's going to come down to, because they do have to get our consent to some degree. And it's important for everyone out there not to give it. Do not consent to any of this nonsense. It's all a big con job. Essentially, government has devolved into this entity that is there to con you into accepting a covert agenda. And they want us to believe that this covert agenda is, well, it's just a strange set of circumstances that came together. It was out of anyone's control. We didn't want this to happen, but now that it did, we have to deal with it. You know, that's really the con that we're all under here, is to convince us that this covert agenda is just a coincidence and it couldn't be helped, guys. So, you know, a little bit earlier, I had sort of touched upon this idea of controlling information and how important controlling information is during a war, because you have to control information and so-called misinformation and disinformation that the enemy may want to spread. And of course, misinformation, when you distill it down, it really is just anything that contradicts the official government narrative. It's hate speech, guys. Okay, there we back to that again. And of course, in war, the importance of controlling propaganda. And it's amazing how we're in a war, not with Russia, not yet, but a different kind of war, a war that most people are totally unaware of. That's the beauty of it for the controllers. Now, of course, now we have this ministry of disinformation, or I'm not sure what they're calling it exactly, but that's essentially what it is. And there's this Nina Jankowicz in charge of it. Almost certainly Jewish. I don't know that for certain, but she has all the earmarks of it, and it would make sense. I mean, basically Biden's cabinet is just stacked to the rafters with a set of people who supposedly represent 2% of the population. Where's the diversity, guys? There's a problem here. Yeah. And what it all really comes down to is controlling the perception of the game board. Controlling the perception of the game board. They don't want the average unwashed goyim cattle to even understand the game board, what the game board is, what are the pieces on it, and what game is being played. That's really what this is coming down to, guys. That all this talk about conspiracy theories and misinformation and hate speech, it all dovetails together in controlling people's perception of the game board. And here's the thing, guys. The version of reality that they're trying to sell the average person is becoming increasingly difficult to sell. It's becoming increasingly difficult to sell. And what they want us to see is that, you know, or believe is that, okay, here's the version of the game they want us to believe. We live in a democracy. Your vote counts. And we live in a capitalist system where all of these corporations are competing. You know, they're all competing for the magic shekels, I mean, dollars, you know, and, you know, there's no collusion behind the scenes. There's no central force guiding so many aspects of these major corporations. They're all independent, guys. But of course, that version of reality is becoming increasingly thin. It's becoming easier and easier to see through that veneer of reality. And if we have all these competing corporations, why don't we have competing ideas about the world and how the world should work and what morality is and how people should have the freedom to live in whatever way they choose? But instead, we have this sort of monoculture emerging from all these independent corporations. It's a monoculture. That's what's so interesting here, guys. This veneer of reality is becoming more and more difficult to sell. And, you know, we have these sort of push-button issues, these emotional issues that, you know, they're arguing about, Democrats and Republicans, who are all funded by the same people, obviously. These push-button emotional issues, like abortion, for example, something that evokes strong emotion and extinguishes rational thinking. And so, you know, just to examine the game board here, we've all heard, anyone that's in the independent media has heard this idea that six corporations control the entire U.S. media. And I would actually say the world's media, because when I was living in South America, it was amazing how the same worldview was pushed, the same political stance, the same, messages were being broadcast in South America, albeit in Spanish, but the same exact messages. I thought we had all these independent corporations competing with each other, right? And really what it comes down to is that these six corporations are really, you know, under a central control. That's clear just by the fact that the ideology being expressed by all these corporations is the same. It's a monoculture. And what they've done is they've essentially created a covert monopoly through interlocking board membership, you know, hidden stock assets, you know, all these different paper games they play. Yeah. And so it's interesting. We see this emerging monoculture, and it masquerades under the guise of democracy and, you know, competition and capitalism. But what we really have is a covert monopoly. A covert monopoly. And we can expand this business model to any vital sector of the economy. Because, you know, what they've been doing is making sure that every vital part of the economy is under centralized control. While we argue about abortion rights. Yeah, the business model of a secret monopoly that parades around under the disguise of democracy and competition. And, you know, we can expand this business model to any vital aspect of the economy. I really do see that very clearly now. And, you know, just the other day, I saw this graphic that illustrated the control of the food supply worldwide. And, I mean, it's really mind-boggling, the control of the food supply. Again, there's approximately six companies. There's that magic six. six companies that control and own all of the brands, all the little independent, you know, food corporations you thought existed. They're not. They're all under the ownership of these six companies. And it's like, you know, Unilever, PepsiCo, Quaker, and three others. And what's interesting is that, again, this is probably just one company, because this is how they're going to coordinate a future crisis. And the whole purpose of the government is to sell this idea that, hey, we didn't want this to happen. Nobody saw this coming. You know, nobody thought that terrorists would crash airplanes into buildings, even though that didn't really happen. But, you know, we have no idea. We've got, you know, billions of dollars of intelligence agencies running around, but we didn't see that one coming, guys. Just like, well, we didn't know that there'd be a shortage of food. My God, who would want that, you know? But in order to accomplish that, you have to have centralized control, because if you have all these independent food companies who really are chasing the dollar and competing, you can't make that happen. So basically, while everyone was running around wearing masks and scampering away with their tail between their legs in fear, the greatest consolidation of wealth and power was occurring right under our noses. Fear is a powerful, powerful force. And it works every time, as long as you believe in it. And now, guys, the next stage of this war is about to begin. We're in a little rest period right now. And the basic scenarios on the table are an expanded European conflict. You know, that Putin, he's worse than Hitler, guys. We got to stop him. Even if we end up crashing the entire Western economy, it's worth it, because those Ukrainians, they got to be free. No price is too high. Let's you and them fight to the last man, says Volodymyr Zelensky. Let's you and them fight to the last man. Then we've got the climate change agenda. And of course, they're really pushing this idea that climate change is causing new variants to be formed. Oh yeah. These viruses are just cooking up in that hot sun, baby. And it's because you have the freedom to drive around and move where you want to go at will. That's the essential reason for climate change. We might need a climate lockdown, guys. It's for your own good, though. So anyway, they keep pushing this idea that, you know, the climate change is causing new variants to be formed, and that, you know, as animals are being forced closer to cities, zoonotic transmission is inevitable. This is all mythology. This is all pseudoscience. We're supposed to believe that it's science. The new God is science. And of course, none of it's verifiable to the average person. You just have to believe what the experts say. That's the game. And then, of course, we've got supply chain shortages and food shortages. We didn't see that coming, guys, even though we own the entire food distribution system. We just didn't see that coming. Sorry about that. But when, you know, when we create the new system, the same people, we're going to be in charge, just so you know. And but this time we're going to get it right. Don't worry. That's the con job of the government, to sell this idea to us. That's really all they're there for. That, and to make us believe that all of these things are real, and that the only solution is more government and more centralization. That's the only way to fix things, guys, is to centralize everything, when in fact the real solution to everything is decentralization. And here's another real tell, guys. If they really believed in carbon footprint, they wouldn't be shipping all your stuff from halfway around the world. Local production would be a very big concept. But of course, they don't want that, because then suddenly each little region can become independent and not reliant on this Leviathan, this system that we're under now. And that said, I would like to bring in my main man, my brother from another mother, and my partner in hate, Mr. Giuseppe, formerly from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I'm living the dream, brother. Man, that was an excellent introduction. Really dotted all the T's and crossed all the I's. But in all seriousness, that was really good. You must have been inspired by the lucidity of the great Harry Vox from last night. I mean, you just nailed it. I mean, yeah. You know, there's a great Russian aphorism that sums this all up in six words: fish swim, birds fly, Jews lie. And that's just it. Everything that we're supposed to be sucking down at the gaslighting toxic teat of the synagogue of Satan is an absolute vulgar and obvious lie to anyone who can even partially critically think. I mean, it's just absurd that the level of clown world, Jewish clown world, that we're having to endure right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just interesting, too, how it's so relevant, this idea that, you know, anti-Semitic incidents are on the rise, 40%. And how it's just sort of all of a sudden it just morphed into this conversation about criticizing the policies of China. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me put up a little picture that will sum up my thoughts on that. China has always been controlled by the synagogue of Satan. It's always the Jew has always controlled the Chinese central bank. And to China's credit, they keep the kosher casino out of their stock market, and they only allow, I think, 5% foreign interest, but that is probably going to change pretty soon. But for now, the Chinese are stupid enough to allow the Jew to wag the Chinese dog, and the Jew, it's just like in that great movie from the 80s, Highlander, there can be only one. And so right now, China thinks they'll be the leader of the new world government, whereas the Jew certainly believes they will be. And I wouldn't bet on China when you're dealing with these soulless Satanists, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting concept. Is China a golem that's gone out of control, or are we dealing, you know, with are we dealing with just a puppet of the bankers? That's this new threat. You know, we've seen over and over. It seems to me in history that they build up these threats. Then we have no choice. We have to go to war, guys. And it's going to be bad, but it's worth it. It seems like they're really setting that up too. I guess there's different ways it could play out depending on you know, when we're dealing on a scale this large, not everything can be controlled. You know, shit, as they say, shit happens. And, you know, different personalities start to make their own decisions, and then they have to alter the plan accordingly.
Right.
But it's just interesting to see, to play around this concept. Is China a golem out of control, or is it merely a puppet? Same with Russia and Vladimir Putin. You know, with this conflict in Ukraine, the thing that's really striking me the most is, of course, the timing. We've been over that. The timing is hard to explain away. And then, you know, it doesn't seem like Russia is trying to make this a quick takeover. It seems like the whole strategy is a slow burn, a slow conquering of Ukraine, if you want to say that. And there's so much destruction, and it might be happening by the Ukrainian army or the Russians or both, of you know, entire cities. You look at some of these cities, I mean, you're going to have to level a good portion of them. You have to demolish all these buildings and build new buildings. So we're going to see a very different Ukraine, a completely new Ukraine in terms of how it looks. They're going to redesign the cities, and they may be redesigning who's going to live there too, given all the Ukrainians that have fled the country. So what are your thoughts on this idea of a new Ukraine?
I think that last night when you were discussing this topic with Harry Vox, and Harry said that and agreed with you that China, Russia, they're all made a deal with the synagogue of Satan, Rothschild banking cabal, especially if you take into account the famous quote from Mother Rothschild that there is no war unless my sons want there to be war. So I think the idea, and Harry brought up an excellent point, that the dominance of the United States is over. I mean, 2/3 of the world's population exist in Eurasia. And so it's the vile Jew has bled this country dry and transferred immense wealth, and the American exceptionalism, that is the exceptionally stupid Americans, have just allowed it to go on. The Jew is essentially a satanic malignancy that has eaten away into every aspect of American life at this point. And so I think that this is all a staged event. I think it could go out of control. It's hard to figure out Putin. We should have Matthew Raphael Johnson on your show again soon, because he seems to be acting as though he is against the Jew world order and is a Orthodox Russian nationalist. But the timing of when he invaded the Ukraine, the way he's just taking his sweet time and not really unleashing the full might and fury of the Russian military. And he could have, gone in and taken over Ukraine in a week if he really wanted to, but he hasn't. Right. And so I don't know. I mean, I said last night, and I'll say it again right now, is that this is all you have to do is look at what is the great reset, what the Jew, the satanic Jew really wants. Everything that we've been experiencing the last, well, decades, but especially the last 3 years, has all been about destabilizing and destroying the United States, gauging if the buffoonish Q and Patriot movement would actually pose a threat, and they laughably pose none. And so now they figured out, oh my God, this is beyond easy. So now they're not even hiding. The Jew is crawling out from under all their rocks and exerting unbelievable, untold influence publicly, with this, the guest, Stephen D. Kelly, censored from our previous network, is coming on, and he can talk all about the rampant instances of child trafficking, child abuse, child ritual sacrifice, child organ harvesting. Blackbird 9 on his show Wednesday said the number is 400,000 children go missing in the United States annually. I've my own research has said that the Department of Justice, before they stopped listing the numbers, it was closer between 800,000 to a million. So somewhere, yes, between 400,000 and a million innocent children by these vile Jews are taken in, their minions, their soulless minions there. I mean,
well, yeah. And Giuseppe, I have this file. I keep all these photographs from my painting, and I have this file just of strange things that I've come across. I just sort of stick in the file. Uh-huh. And I found an ad, back during the milk carton days, that was published in National Geographic. This is before National Geographic essentially became a woke magazine that focused on climate change rather than showing the beauty of the world. Right. But anyway, the ad said that a million children go missing every year. That was from the late 90s.
Yep.
So, in all likelihood, the number is higher now than it was then, just because this cancer has continued to grow, metastasize, and gain, yep, power. Nothing has been done to, quell this power. And, it's funny, there was this rumor going around in the, some of the Trump the Trumpian circles that Fauci had been arrested and taken to Gitmo. Yeah. And as proof, this was about a week, week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago. They were saying, well, as proof, well, have you seen Dr. Fauci in public recently? No. Well, he took a week off doing whatever, and now he's back and stuck his foot in his mouth when he said, COVID is over, the pandemic is over. And then the White House said, no, it's not over. And then he got back on TV the next day, oh, no, it's not over. What I meant is phase one is over. We're moving on to phase two. We're over the acute stage. You see, it's all science, and it's hard for you little people to understand. But basically, COVID is going to go on forever. Oh, I mean, as long as we say, oh, no, I mean, until the science says it's gone.
That's exactly right, Dave. In fact, what's so laughable about science, which is really just a fraudulent pseudo-scientific mishmash of big pharma lies, Jew banker lies, they control the money that funds the academic and private research institutes. So if you want to make your $400,000, your $800,000 a year as a PhD research scientist, you better deliver our results. So the bottom line is scientism is you start with an end goal, which is we want remdesivir released, even though it's toxic and deadly and murders half the people who take it. We want the bubonic Jew jab, the genetic injection that's an experiment on the goyim cattle of humanity, passed. And then you backfill with rigged studies, cherry-picked data, and a lot of marketing jargon. I mean, so there is no real science. The real scientists are marginalized or murdered or doing everything they can, but are in the fringes. I mean, we know plenty of real scientists, and you never see that on the mainstream media. And Harry Vox said last night, if the media, or maybe it was you. No, you said it to Harry. If the media wasn't completely controlled by the synagogue of Satan, why don't we have debates with Dr. Judy Mikovits or Dr. Vernon Coleman or Dr. Mike Eden discussing with some clown like Fauci or Birx or Francis Collins? I mean, three complete inept stooges that have literally been propped up by the massive rocket-like acceleration of the Peter Principle. Those three buffoons should be selling siding instead of PhD-level quackery. It's unbelievable.
I like that term, backfilling. That's exactly right. And, it's interesting. All the diversions that these dark – or not dark, but black holes that they put people into that lead nowhere, like this Fauci thing. And this is all connected to the Trumpian idea that Trump's going to ride in on a white horse and he's going to save the day. And I think our guest here in the next hour, Stephen Kelly, has quite a few things to say about Donald Trump. I'm interested to get him on a little rant about Donald Trump because, it's interesting. I was at the gym yesterday and I was talking to this guy, really good guy, intelligent guy, pretty well informed. We covered some basic stuff and he's like, oh yeah, I agree. He even got it about the vaccine. And then, out of the blue, he goes, well, don't worry, Dave. Trump's coming back in 2024. He's going to put an end to all this stuff. Fauci's going to Gitmo, blah, blah, blah. Bill Gates is going to be blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, my God. Jeez. And you just see the power of this psyop to take intelligent people who are well-intentioned and you put them in the Trump hole and they're just going to run around on the hamster cage endlessly going nowhere. It's incredible, the power of this, man.
Well said. I mean, it's so laughable that anybody thinks that the complete Jew puppet Donald J. Trump isn't anything but an Elmer Gantry-like controlled opposition. And he is such a puppet who dances to the strings of the Rothschild banking cabal. It's not even funny. I mean, my God, his son-in-law is this faggoty Shabbat Lubavitch, a lady boy, and and his daughter, his beloved daughter, who he thinks is so brilliant, went through the Klaus Schwab Young Leaders World Economic Forum, and she's essentially a convert to the synagogue of Satan. I mean, Trump brags about being the father of the vaccine and Operation Warp Speed, which is so laughable. I mean, I don't know. I mean, our beloved friend Jim Fetzer drinks the Trump Jew aid, and it's just bizarre the level of cognitive dissonance that comes from basically intelligent people. But see, the problem, Dave, is that the buffoons in the Patriot movement and the Q movement actually think that voting matters, and actually thinks that two rigged organizations, the Democratic Jew ass licking party and the Republican Jew ass licking party, actually will allow any real candidate of the people to ascend to any position of power. I mean, when we had Robert Phoenix, the great Robert Phoenix, on Thursday, he was mentioning how his congressman in the rural Texas, you know, comes out against all this stuff. And there are a handful of people like that, but they wield absolutely no power. And that they are allowed to be elected to give the semblance of the farce, the fictional farce that voting matters. So, yeah, it's really sad. I mean, there is a way to fix the system, but it's never going to get done, which is you would go to nothing but paper ballots. The paper ballots could be run through optical scanning machines. So you'd get, and you do robust exit polling. So you would get the winner. You would know the winner that night, but you would then say the caveat, all these votes are going to be hand counted by independent. There's going to be a camera on them 24/7. But right now we're pretty much 99% sure that XYZ won, and now we're going to count the paper ballots. There's going to be no tampering. So you could do that, and you could actually have fair elections and have the United States be an actual republic with a functional democracy. But this is a Jew-controlled third world shithole now. So this is Panem et Kirk Kansas with celebrity instruction and cancerous, malignant, soulless Jews at every level of power in every powerful institution. So yeah, of course we're going to have a free election. Of course. Of course Donald Trump's going to save the day.
And Mike Gatti, you know, brought on the very point that, you know, it's voting that adds legitimacy to the system. It's voting that gives legitimacy to the system. So if people or enough people simply refuse to vote, government would be de facto invalid. And by its very essence, not representing the will of the people, because people are refusing to participate in this ritual. And that's really what it's a ritual of voting. And you're right. There could be accurate votes, but that's not going to happen. Like in a lot of third world countries, they actually dip your finger in ink after you vote, and it's all paper ballots. Look what happened in France. Apparently, you know, this Macron, I call him Maricon, he was supposedly re-elected. And there's actually been almost rioting going on there. It's not being reported, but people are very angry about it because the man is hated and reviled all over the country for obvious reasons. Why would they vote this clowning again? And I think, you know, what's happened is elections all over the West, probably all over the world, are fixed. And yeah, this is the situation we're in. I'm getting a echo, so I'm going to drop off and come right back. So,
okay.
I'll be right back. In the meantime, it's the Giuseppe Show. Okay.
All right. Well, want to thank everybody. I see Stephen Kelly is in the green room. We'll be bringing him on next year, hour rather. And it's interesting that he was censored at our old network, like so many other really good fighters, like Dr. Rima. What the heck is her last name? Anyway, we're going to get her because this is real free speech now. This is not free speech light as Blackbird 9 says, by the learned boomers, this is the real deal. And we're honored to be here at Speak Free Radio. And it is going to, yeah, thank you, Ruby Tuesday. Dr. Rima LeBeau, exactly. She's a very impressive woman. And here comes the man of the day, Uncle Scorpio. He's back.
Okay. And see, I think the echo's gone. I hope it is. It's amazing that this Macron was reelected, a man reviled and hated by the country he supposedly rules over. And then it's just a phony election, just like Groper Joe. Not that I'm a supporter of Trump, obviously not. I mean, it's the best way to control the situation is to own both horses. And there's so many red flags surrounding Trump. It's not even funny, Like just this idea that he hires, of all people, to be attorney general, this William Barr character, whose father was the guy that connected Jeffrey Epstein into the sort of the bigger circles. And again, it's a mystery as to where all this Epstein money came from. Obviously, they just used him as a front man for intelligence and blackmailing operations. But, and then there's videos of Trump, yucking it up with Epstein. I mean, their arm around each other, and they're kind of whispering in each other's ears like you would a good friend, and then laughing. I mean, so the body language, just from that one clip I saw, and that's not a still photo that can be Photoshopped. This was a whole clip of them at a party together. And this goes back, some time ago. I mean, this is like from the 90s, maybe. I'm not even sure. An old clip. And so it was obvious these two men were friends. They ran the same circles. And the idea that he's, it's going to take these people to Gitmo and save the day. It's so pathetic. I'm just amazed at how many intelligent people and well-intentioned people fall for it. And here's another thing about Trump I think is very significant. He will make an excellent wartime president.
Oh, he'll be ruthless and allow the neoconservative end of the world types to go at it. It will be a real tragedy if that marionette gets installed again, and sure looks like it's coming, right?
Yeah, and then of course you mentioned his son-in-law, this Kirchner character. That owned 666 Fifth Avenue. Oh, gee, that's right. Just a coincidence. Yeah. And, his daughter, when you convert to Judaism, especially, Chabad Lubavitch, which is a pretty radical, in a lot of ways, sort of a fringe operation. It's certainly not, mainstream Judaism. I mean, you renounce Christ, you renounce all of that, and you signal your allegiance to this group. And this Rabbi Schneerson was one of these Christ figures. They thought he was Christ, and it's a bizarre cult, really. And and it's a very dark thing. They have a bizarre set of beliefs, and so again, this is another red flag. The idea that Trump is some kind of practicing Christian, the same kind of Christian that George Bush is, it's just the government has really devolved into a con job to sell the covert agenda to the population. That's really all they're there for now. And that's really what, if you distill it down, that's what it is.
100% agreement. I mean, it's really tragic that in our lifetime, I remember, even just 40, 50 years ago, the government wasn't controlled by these soulless Jew parasites, and now it completely is lock, stock, and bagel. And there's nothing more tragic to me than these decent people who have, a modicum of intelligence, all the way up to these PhDs who are like, oh yeah, I have inside information, Simon Parks and Charlie Ward and that CIA stooge, the Patriot streetwalker who has been ascended to high levels and has infiltrated a lot of good people like the Bollingers and all that. They're coming out with this new 10-day or 8-day instead of the truth about cancer, it's now the truth about propaganda. And there's a lot of really great individuals who are going to be part of it. And then you got the phony shithead, the Patriot streetwalker, is going to be interviewed. And he's buddy with Mike Adams, and Mike Adams has got to be controlled some way because he comes up with some great shit, and then he just totally shows what a puppet he is of the deep state sometimes as well. So
You know, Mike Adams actually lived in Ecuador for a while, and according to some people that I know personally, he got involved in some very shady real estate deals and encouraging patriots to move down there and then selling them land at vastly overpriced prices and land that wasn't even that good. And then he ended up leaving and leaving a lot of people behind that weren't exactly happy with the deal they got on the property. That's a whole other aspect. But yeah, Mike Adams has a habit of fear mongering and giving you a lot of truth and then taking you off into a strange direction that's not accurate. And Charlie Ward. It's funny you mentioned Charlie Ward. I think Stephen Kelly might have a few things to say about Charlie Ward too. So we'll maybe get him on a little Charlie Ward rant too. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Stephen Kelly is sort of the forbidden guest that we had. You know, I was actually notified by the management of Revolution Radio literally about 10 minutes before the show that
I remember that
Stephen Kelly is banned from Revolution Radio. We can't have him on. And, you know, that made me look bad. And it just, that was sort of the first real indication that, hey, something ain't right here.
Right.
And along with this idea that so many of the people that run the place actually believe in hate speech. And if you believe in hate speech, you've already lost the war. It's as simple as that. Yeah. So we'll get Stephen on a couple of, maybe on a good Trump rant and a Charlie Great. Ward rant. Cause those are important things that, you know, it's time to stamp out some of this ridiculous disinformation that we're supposed to believe as reality. And these people that peddle you into one hamster cage after another, where you just run around and around and around and don't go anywhere.
Oh, well, absolutely agree. And again, well stated. You're on fire today, my man. That's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, it's just clown world, lock, stock, and bagel. And we're really looking at some dark times. I mean, the synagogue of Satan is making no bones about their true fifth generation level war on us, which is they want to starve us, they want to genetically experiment on us, and they want to kill a whole hell of a lot of us. And anyone who's dumb enough to believe the lies of corporate scientism and take the bubonic Jew jab, well, good luck. Really good luck to you. It's not going to end well for you.
Yeah, maybe it's time to stop trusting authority figures mindlessly and believing the version of reality that they want us to believe. I think that's, we're going to see this separation of societies. We're going to see two different societies emerge from this. One that is dedicated to death and destruction and in rebellion against God and the creation. And the other that wants to... Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And I just want to thank everybody in the chat rooms. We've got three different chat rooms going and they're lively and uncensored, yet somehow they continue to work. We haven't had any kind of problem. People seem to be able to regulate their own behavior. Wow, what a concept. Amazing how that works. So anyway, in this hour, it is my pleasure to welcome the forbidden guest, a guest I tried to have on some time ago, but was notified by management at Revolution Radio that Stephen Kelly is forbidden. Stephen, how are you, sir? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good, but I got to just tell you right away, I'm having to use my monitor speaker, not my headset, so I think that's why you guys are having the echo issue. I always use the headphones, so you can hear me okay, though, right?
Yeah, you look good, you sound good, and the echo thing is a recurring problem, but we're able to solve that, but everything's good now. So
it's funky, because I don't hear myself over the monitor, but I hear you guys, so hey.
You got to love it. StreamYard's pretty cool. It works pretty well more often than not. A lot better than Skype overall, and much better audio quality.
Did you want to talk about Revolution Radio at all?
Yeah. Well, that was an interesting experience. And, you know, basically the issue of hate speech became bigger and bigger over there. And this idea that my show was basically deemed 3 hours of hate by, let's just come out and say it, by Lady Horse and some other people there. But I guess you were on Revolution Radio.
You want to know the full lowdown on Revolution Radio? Uncensored? The uncensored truth about Mike Ringley and all that? All right, well, bear in mind, first of all, when I got in this business, I didn't know who anybody was. I went right to the top, you know, with your Sean David Mortons and your David or Jordan Maxwells and all that, and I didn't know any of these guys, and I didn't know anything. And I got, you know, of course, brought into the networks, and I made some networks really big, really quick. And when I came into Revolution Radio, they had like 30,000 people, and their record was an 80,000 listeners for a Kerry Cassidy episode. And after about, I don't know, 3 months or so, I think it was, I got them up to 1 million listeners. And this was because I was doing stuff in Syria, and I was very heavy in Syria, and I was very heavy in the Donbass, which, of course, is very much in the news today. But Mike Ringley, as I found out, as you probably know, was ex-Air Force Intelligence. And his job was actually COINTEL. And I actually got a phone call from Kerry Cassidy years ago after the Bilderbergers put a hit out on me. And they told me, she called me from London, and she was actually at a Bilderberger meeting in London. This was back during a solstice or some crap that she was supposedly doing. Anyway, she basically said that myself and two others, we were working on some tech, and they didn't like it, and they wanted to kill us. And that's when I found out that Kerry Cassidy basically was working directly under Michael Aquino, and she was a bag woman, and she basically took Bilderberger money that was coming down from Michael Aquino, and she would distribute it to people, various people in the industry, one of them being Mike Ringley, one of them being, Sean. Anyone you can think of, all the big names were getting paid off by this money. This is a COINTEL operation. This is what we call gatekeeper. So the gatekeepers are going to want to get the people in there that are making trouble, and they want to control them. Now, Mike, this during the time of the Bundy Ranch nonsense, I don't know if you remember that, Mike got really into it. He started sending them generators. He had people embedded over there. He had all kinds of shit. And then when the thing happened with the bird sanctuary and Lavoie Finnegum got shot, that's when I said, this is BS. And that's when I came up with Occupy the Getty. And I said, you know, we got to get this energy, all these people protesting, and get them to actually put the spotlight somewhere it should be put, not in a bird sanctuary in the middle of nowhere or some ranch or some freeway underpass, but on the actual seat of power of the actual enemy where we could actually do something to shut them down. Anyway, he didn't like that at all, and he basically tossed me off the network because of that. But I didn't take any crap from him. I'd call him out. I called him a drunk. I called him everything else. He'd act all tough, tell me he had guns and shit, but, you know, I do too. So, you know, I'm badder than he is. But anyway, I get the last laugh. But like you said, they got, 1,000 listeners now or something?
Well, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's nowhere near what they want the host to think.
I can tell you
that for sure. But, you know, anyway, we were allowed to play in their sandbox, as Giuseppe says, and but that's over because, having my
There's
show
no leadership now.
Yeah, it's just not what I'm looking for. But let me introduce you to Giuseppe, too. Giuseppe's my co-host and my brother from another mother. So, Giuseppe, say hello to Stephen, please.
I was checking out your lamps.
You're muted, Giuseppe.
It's great operator error. Stephen, I've monitored your work for years and very impressive, and you do have balls of brass to tell the truth.
Stainless, man, stainless. Come on. I've been told. Sorry.
That's awesome. Fantastic. But anyway, I admire your courage and your body of work, so it's great that we could finally have you on the show. And yeah, it's kind of sad with Revolution Radio because there's a faction that is controlling that is really doesn't want real free speech. And then there's a faction like Mr. Rowe and Mitchell Bupp that are just excellent people and miss being able to interact with them. But you know, they're not the ruling faction, so we're out of there.
You remember the chat room or the round tables they had?
Oh, the late night stuff? Yeah.
Right. And then they would get people in there, you know, like, you know who I'm talking about, but they would run these round tables. And then what would happen was all the people that were doing the roundtables would start taking themselves serious, and they started thinking that the roundtables were actual shows. And then you start getting people like Lady Horace, etc., thinking they started taking themselves really serious. They weren't talent. There's no talent there anymore.
Right.
These were like call-in. People who were call-in contributors to roundtables became the hosts. You know, and then what do you have left? There's no Kerry Cassidy. There's no Sean David Morton. There's no me. There's no... Hell, one of the best ones they had was Robin. Remember Robin? I don't remember her last name. She was married to Robin.
Oriental medicine doctor.
7 days a week she was doing that show, I think it was.
She was good, right. She died of cancer, yeah.
Died of cancer. She was great.
Richard Hoagland. Richard Hoagland.
Richard Hoagland's wife, yes. Yeah, Robin, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
She was really good. Yeah, I talked to her a couple times because my midlife career change was becoming a doctor of oriental medicine. I've had my own practice for about 15 years now, and she was very cool, very savvy, really enjoyed. I talked with her twice about the profession and stuff, and really, there's a lot of people who aren't good practitioners, but she was really good. Yeah,
she was one of the few people that gave me any respect, or didn't get all jealous when I had all these crazy numbers. She wanted to say, how do I do it? And instead of saying, oh, it's not true, she's saying, help me do it. You know, I missed her.
Well, anyway. That's right on. Well, I think we covered our Revolution Radio saga and the fact that you're the forbidden guest. So let's take a jump into some of your viewpoints. I'm interested. My girlfriend actually is a fan of your show too, and we were watching one of your shows where you were sort of going into this Ukraine thing and these strange Nazis and that are part of this Ukrainian conflict. And of course, these Nazis are actually fighting for the Kalergi plan. They're fighting for Ukraine's right to join NATO and the EU and by de facto joining the Kalergi plan as well. So, and then of course, you have the borders of modern day Ukraine, essentially the same thing as ancient Khazaria. And you've got the Zelensky character who played essentially a president on TV. And now he's the president.
You can watch it on Netflix right now. They put that damn show on Netflix.
Yeah, right. So, why don't you just jump into your take on this conflict and the new Khazarian angle and these Nazis that are...
All right, well, first of all, let me just say this. It very much saddens me to wake up and realize that I'm living in the center of the enemy territory, that I'm a German and I'm in the middle of Nazi Germany and Hitler is in power, and this is who I'm fighting, okay? I have one fortunate advantage, though, and that is that they can't kill me. That's why I can get away with saying these things. They flat out said they can't kill me. But yeah, we are the enemy. We're evil. Anything we say, it's just horrible. It's just horrible. The crap that I can't watch the media at all whatsoever because the propaganda is so thick. But I can take heart in knowing that the only reason it's so thick is because we're kicking their ass, and this Getty thing is going to bring all this crap down within a very short period of time. You may not hear it. You may not see it. But trust me, the momentum is there, the action is taking place, the fires are burning, and they're doing everything they can to stop it, including initiating World War III, which is what this is. Now, when the Ukraine conflict started, obviously it started with a coup that the United States paid for. That was $5 billion that we paid for that coup, and the money was given directly to Nazis, actual Ukrainian Nazis. They were a fringe movement of the country in the western part of the country. Turns out George Soros put up the $5 billion, apparently. It didn't really matter, whatever. It still came from us.
And Victoria Nuland was, or AKA Victoria.
All those people, bloodthirsty vampires. The entire Obama administration, who are back in power. But the thing is, though, is that what they did in Mariupol, what they did when they burned all those people alive, and those young Ukrainians were filling up those Molotov bottles like it was a holiday. was horrible, and that was genocide. And you have to understand the politics of these people. They've always been genocidal. This is not necessarily a cultural thing per se, a Jewish thing, a Khazarian thing, but these particular people, these Ukrainian nationalists, are very, very much into ethnic cleansing. It's what they do. Now, the fact that they're Jewish and all that, yes, that's a big thing, and it's all very confusing for most people, but that's what they use. But you got to understand that genocide doesn't have sides. Both sides are trying to kill each other. They need to kill each other. When you say Putin's controlled by the Chabad, sure, it's all Chabad. Everything's Chabad. But Chabad wants nothing more than to kill everybody, as we know, Agenda 21, and that's what they're doing. Now back to this business with Ukraine. Once that coup took place, horrible crap happened. These so-called punitive battalions like Azov went out. They just started killing immediately, and it was really bad. They went to the police stations. The first thing they did is went to all the police stations, and when the cops showed up for work that morning, they would take them out and kill them. All the cops got killed. All the cops in the eastern part of the country got killed when they showed up for work the next morning. They did this is because these battalions, these Nazis, originally came from police force. When World War II happened, when Ukraine was invaded and Hitler took over, when the Bolshevists went in there, it was the police that basically took their guns and became the guerrillas, if you will. And so they knew that they had to take out the police. Well, immediately after that, they start killing civilians. And this crap that they're trying to blame on Russia right now is nothing. It pales to the horrible techniques and methods that these punitive battalions were using on civilians just because they spoke Russian. So, and I know people in the Donbass. I've done many, many shows with people in the Donbass area, and I watched that thing go on for a good 8 years or so. And bear in mind, Syria was going on at the same damn time, and I had friends in Damascus, et cetera, all over the place. And, you know, so it was hard to keep track of these things. But the bottom line is that every time those Ukrainians would go in there and try to wipe out the people in the West or the East, they would get their butts kicked, and they would get encircled into these things that they would call cauldrons, which were basically when they get completely surrounded and outflanked and cut off and are able to be wiped out. And every time the Ukrainian forces, the belligerent, offensive Ukrainian forces were captured and were on the verge of getting wiped out, the international community would come in and say, oh, don't do that. Don't do, you know, you got to save these people. Just like the international community came in and told the Russians, no, you can't bomb Aleppo. You can't bomb all the ISIS to smithereens. We have to protect them. Same damn thing. And now we have, and I didn't realize how bad it got because I stopped paying attention. I thought, well, you know, those people in Donbass, they can take care of themselves. But the whole damn time, including during the Trump administration, we were pumping heavy weapons into that country. Biden says, oh, we're giving them $1 billion worth of stuff. Shit, we gave them way more than $1 billion worth of stuff. We've given them horrible stuff. We give them 50 caliber Barrett sniper rifles so that they can snipe civilians. You know, stuff like that. These howitzers that they're sending over there right now that fire high explosives 25 miles away, they're aiming at civilians. They're killing civilians. And if you think that we're going to be able to supply all these billions of dollars of weapons to these guys so they can kill Russians, and the Russians aren't going to figure out that maybe they need to cut to the square one and take out the source of these weapons, that's what's going to happen. So when they go, oh, Putin's talking nuclear war, what the hell are they going to do? NATO is trying to invade Russia. It's NATO up on the borders of Russia. It's NATO committing genocide. It's NATO's doing everything wrong, and Putin isn't doing shit but trying to save lives, stop genocide, and get rid of these damn Nazis. And if people can't understand that Nazis are Jews, they need to go back and learn about the history of the Illuminati and who started the Illuminati and where it started. It started in Frankfurt, Germany, and it started with not just Amschel Mayer, not just Weishaupt, but everyone likes to forget there was also Jacob Frank. a Frankist, right. A Sabbatean Jew who thought he was the Messiah. Now, these guys are nationalists. People need to understand that Zionism and nationalism is the same thing. I don't care what country it is. If you're pushing nationalism, you are the problem, because we are all humans. And this is world is full of humans, and this national shit is bullshit, and it's class distinction crap, it's jealousy, and it's used to make genocide happen. And all these people rah-rah behind the flag like Trump. Trump is a Frankist Jew. He came from Frankfurt. His family has always been Jewish, and yet these Trumpers can't see that. It's like, do you really think Ivanka Trump married Chabad Jewish boy because he was cute? Give me a break. It's like, do you think that this so-called Christian man is going to let his golden-haired child marry this swarthy Chabad type unless he was also Chabad? They're the same thing. Trump is a slumlord, just like, what's his face, Jared?
Kushner.
Kushner and Trump are both slumlords to the tunes of billions of dollars. And, you know, here's the thing. Epstein. People like to say, oh, Epstein, you know, Elon Musk ran around with Epstein. Trump is a piker compared to Elon Musk. You can't even deal with Epstein unless you give him $1 billion and you give him power of attorney. That means Epstein controls your life. Now, all that money that Trump and all those other world leaders gave Epstein, it's still there. And Epstein is also still there. And the big question that everybody should be asking is, who took over the mafia when Robert Vesco died in Cuba? Now, here's a big clue. Who took over the Resorts International and the big casino that used to also be owned by Robert Vesco? Donald Trump. Go figure. So if I had to figure out who was heading the mob since the death of Robert Vesco, and I say mob, I mean all the mobs, Jewish mob, Mexican mob, Colombian mob, Italian mob, all the mobs. It's just a corporation. They all work under one umbrella. And guess what? The NSA and the CIA, same thing. They came afterwards.
Oh, the they've been working hand in glove, really, since World War II.
World War II was OSS. Okay, right. I worked for both of these entities. When I was working for the NSA, I thought it was the CIA. When I was brought in, they told me it was the CIA. I thought it was the CIA. I had a history of working with CIA. I thought it was more CIA. I didn't see an NSA flag sitting there, a black flag that says NSA. I still think it's the CIA. I didn't know I was working for Oliver North. I knew we were fighting Contras and all this stuff. But here's the thing. The guy that recruited myself, my brother, was Don Nixon, Richard Nixon's nephew. Okay? Now, Don Nixon was the number two man underneath Robert Vesco. That makes him the number two man in the international worldwide mafia that controls everything. You know, and they called that organization Intertel. Now, Don Nixon thought he was, he used to tell everyone he was a Templar assassin. He thought he was a real, you know, nasty boy. Well, anyway, he got in a hassle with my brother over some money. My brother took him for some money. And he went back to Cuba to cry to his boss, Robert Vesco. And while he was crying to his boss at Vesco's home in Cuba, Castro's police broke down the door and threw both their butts in jail. Now, Don Nixon got out of jail about a month later. You might remember when that happened, but he never came back and said boo about anything, about any of the money that he was owed or anything like that. And Robert Vesco, he never got out of jail. He died in jail. So
yeah.
Those guys don't like me very much. And they can't do anything about it either. I had a sit-down dinner with the trust fund manager of the Getty Museum, and he was a young buck. He was a bit naive. He didn't really know what he was getting into, but he had a really high position, and he flat-out told me, once he figured out who I was, he said that they've been looking for me and that they can't kill me, and that they know that I basically take down the entire New World Order, but they were kind of wanted to know how I was going to do it, you know.
Okay, well, I definitely want to get into the Getty information here. That's big, and I definitely want to cover that in depth. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man? What is your question or comment, sir?
Yeah, I have a question for Stephen. A few moments ago, he said that Zionism is nationalism, but in my opinion, the only way to defeat the synagogue of state and Rothschild globalist New World Order would be a rise of nationalism.
Well, that's what they want you to think.
Well, I mean, I completely don't agree with we're all just human. That's like Pollyanna, you know, like Dr.
Well, let me explain the nationalist thing. Okay, what you have to understand is these are just words. Okay, now, you're only using one of the words. There's actually two words. The movement that the Jews started was called socialist, or Social Zionism. It was like a social. Okay, in other words, yeah, that's it. Social Zionism. That's the full name of the movement. Social Zionism. Now, the Nazi movement. The full name of the Nazi movement is National Socialism. So we have. Right. Social Zionism, National Socialism. You see, the words are interchangeable. They mean the same thing. It's the same thing. They were created by the same people. The guys that created Zionism also created National Socialism. You see, this is the thing. It's just like if you ever watched Star Wars, you've seen the Clone Wars part, and you notice that in the Clone Wars, they actually had to create an enemy. They had to make up an enemy so that they could justify having their big empire. They couldn't have an empire until they had fabricated an enemy. And that's exactly what they did. So they said, if you look at the words of the people that started the Zionist movement, the big Jew guys, they'll tell you, they'll say, National Socialism is our biggest ally. We are going to use these guys. We're going to make these guys. We're going to use these guys. You have to understand that everything they do is based on playing this victim crap. You can't get anywhere without the victim crap. Now let me cut to the chase real quick, because let's forget all this modern history, okay? Let's go back a little bit to, say, I mean, we won't even go back as far as David and Solomon, but let's go back to the fall of the first temple. Okay, this is Solomon, you know, when Israel had already split in two. Nobody likes to talk about Israel splitting two, but this is kind of really important. Well, here's the thing. You had three types of rabbi: Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essen, right? Two of them, the Essens and the Sadducees, required a temple. The Pharisees did not. They did not use a temple. They didn't use a book. Everything they did was verbal and repetitive. Why is this important? Because when the Babylonians came to invade, and you got to remember, Jerusalem was the biggest center of population in the world at the time. It wasn't no slouch little backwater third world thing. They could defend themselves. So when the Babylonian troops showed up, what happened? Someone opened the doors and let them in. Okay, and who do you think that was? The Pharisees. Now, why did they do that? Because they knew that through the death of their comrades and through the death and annihilation and genocide, they could gain power. And what happens? They go to Babylon for 250 years, and during that 250 years, there is no temple. And because there is no temple, there are no Essens and there are no Sadducees. So that means that only leaves the Pharisees. Now, the Pharisees don't need a temple, but they get released from Babylon. Never mind the one that went to Assyria, but the half that went to Babylon, they come back and they rebuild the temple. Now, remember, they don't even need a temple, but who's rebuilding it? The Pharisees. So it's all BS. Now, what happens? Here's the thing. We all like to talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls were written by what? The Essens, I believe it was, or the Sadducees, one of these guys? I think it was the Essens. Well, anyway, people go, well, wow, these were buried because the Romans came into town. No! They were gone by the time of the Romans. They buried them during the time of the Babylonian invasion. Now, any Jewish historian, when presented with this, is going to go, gosh, wow. You know? Well, guess what? When the Romans came to town and invaded, who opened the doors and let the Romans in? Once again, the Pharisees. Now, they're not going to argue that. They're not going to argue that at all. But if you get them to admit that they let the Romans into the door, you can pretty much figure that they also let the Babylonians in the door. So the whole time they're doing this so they could become the rulers. And who are the rulers today? The Chabad. And who are the Chabad? The Pharisees. So you got the most genocidal people forever, the ones, the same people that would throw their own people under the bus, not once, more than once, over and over and over. The Holocaust. What is Holocaust? The word Holocaust means blood sacrifice. Who's being sacrificed? Their own children, their own people. That's what they do. They killed their own people because that's how you please Moloch. You give them your own children. Right. You don't give them your enemy's children.
The reality of the Holocaust has certainly been exaggerated, to say the least. But I want to kind of follow up on Giuseppe's question. Giuseppe, I want you to jump back in here. Just about this idea of, you know, nationalism and really the two big things on the table here are either globalism or nationalism. I think the solution personally is getting a decentralization, having smaller areas that are... I mean, if the government has to live near the people that they supposedly govern, that's a step in the right direction. This idea.
Have you read The Prince?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay,
but I don't think...
That, what does he
I
say?
I don't believe in government in the way that we are being administered it now. And maybe Giuseppe could follow up a little bit. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, Stephen, what, go ahead. Tell the audience what you're referencing in Machiavelli's The Prince.
Well, in The Prince, basically, now obviously they're talking about a much smaller society, but they talk about the necessity of the leader to go out and rub elbows and be seen, and you know, and they also talk about the management and how when you have these territories scattered about, how you have to have people managing these things that you can trust and stuff like that. I was listening to you guys talking about the voting system and stuff like that, and there's a couple things that I'm going to throw out there that are going to seem really anti-thema and are going to, you're not going to like at all. But this is the reality, and this is one of the things that we're going to all have to learn probably the hard way. You got to understand that the people that are running the world right now, this enemy, it's a new world government. It's a one world government. It's a big thing. We are working under this idea that we have our say and that we vote and that we have some sort of determination over what happens on the surface of the earth. That's a joke. These national things and these divisions of borders and countries and all that we cling to, that we think are legitimate, they're not really legitimate, because when you go underground, you go into one of these bunkers, take your pick, to any one of them, you're in a system that's international. It's no, there's no borders. There's only one government. And, you know, we could talk about that, but it's not, the enemy is a big cohesive thing that's not split into a whole bunch of little segments like we are.
Right.
You know, and that keeps us weak. The reality is that the only way to defeat an international government body like that is with an international body. And I've got to tell you, my work right now, I mean, flat out, it really doesn't matter what anybody says, because we're doing this. We actually are doing this, and we could talk about how we're doing this, but suffice it to say that we're doing this. They know we're doing this. It's happening. And when we're done doing this, you're still going to have a one-world government, only it's going to be a benevolent one-world government. It's not going to be one that eats your children and offers blood to Moloch. I mean, that crap's going to change. A lot of the Illuminati, the problem with the Illuminati isn't so much that they're wrong, it's that they're working for Satan. You take Satan out of the equation, you're still going to have a one-world government. And even a Christian has to understand, Christ is not returning to run for office in one little segment of the globe. This is going to be a one-world thing. And that's really how it's going to work. And the thing about nationalism, I hear you talking about third world countries and all that. When this mission is completed, when the evil forces that are in charge have been vanquished, you're not going to have third world countries. It's going to be one world, and everybody's going to be equal, and you're going to have real equality, and it's going to be economic, and there's more than enough money to pay for it, because there's at least 9,800% more money underground than there is on the surface. You guys just have no clue just how much is down there.
Yeah. Well, but Stephen, I don't think you can really have equality just because we're all given different gifts. different.
Well, no, I agree. No human is created equal.
Let me just finish. I do think the problem with any advocation of any kind of world government is human nature. You're going to have, even if you start off with the best of intentions, it's going to devolve into a very dark thing. These people always will infiltrate from the inside.
I can only speak
for myself.
That's
why I think decentralization is the best way forward. Maybe your thoughts on that.
Back to Machiavelli. Okay, this is where Machiavelli comes in. Machiavelli recognized that you need to have local representation, et cetera, kind of like what you're talking about, little cells of government and all that. But ultimately, yes, a system is going to have to work its way upwards. You're going to have, even if you were back to an agrarian society, which is probably what's going to happen, you're going to have little communities that are working together, division of labor, et cetera, et cetera. That's normal, of course. But it's the governorship. But what you don't understand, and let me just try to give you a glimpse into the future. You're not going to have guns. This is not going to be done with guns. We're not going to control you with guns. We're going to control you with stuff that you don't even understand right now. And that's just the way it is. It's kind of like the Matrix when Neo broke the Matrix. The first one that breaks the Matrix is going to change it for everybody else. And then it's up to you how you're going to manifest the reality. But the reality that everybody's going to be perceiving is not going to be the reality that you're perceiving right now. Okay? So that is something that we can change. And you also have to understand, and if you ever get into the CIA and NSA, you find this stuff out pretty quick as you get into it, and you find out that it's not all human stuff. Okay? Right away, you're getting into religious-type crap that people would call religious, spiritual, metaphysical, and then comes the alien crap. You've got alien technology, and before you can even really understand what's going on in the world, you have to understand the mechanics of how the universe really works, and the best source for that is going to be coming from these entities that are controlling us. You know, they've all got their different versions and ideas of how this stuff works. So, I mean, it's just not, the mechanics of reality is not what humans really think it is. There's a lot of magic involved.
Oh, okay? Absolutely. I agree with that. And we don't have to agree on every point. I mean, we can still, I think we're on the same page in enough ways that disagreeing about some things is okay. Giuseppe, I really want you to jump back in and get your point out there and whatever your question or comment might
be. Well, I just like to ask, I agree with everything Stephen's talking about on the metaphysical level, that there's so much dark magic, hypnotic deception and everything, but I still am trying to understand how you feel that the only way to defeat this satanic globalist empire is by an international, when humanity for centuries to this day is tribal and hierarchically based, right?
They're animals.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They're animals. Okay, look, this is why they eat your children. This is why they suck out the adrenochrome. This is why they don't care anything about your opinions, because basically, yes, we're animals. And yeah, they have a lot to do with that, but unfortunately, that has to change. And a big part, in other words, Tesla said it very good. He says, how you know, and I'm going to paraphrase him, but he says, how do you hand this much power to people who are so irresponsible? And yes, humans have to be responsible, and we're going to have lots of carrots and sticks to enforce that. But let me just go back real quick to the whole, you know, you're talking about the underground, and it's just so you understand just how this is going to work. When I don't want to destroy anything. This is not about blowing up their crap. We are going to compel them to give up and basically beg for mercy. And that will come, and that has to be the way it's going to be done, because I have no intention of trying to go about cutting all their heads off. If anything, my job is to protect them from all the people that do want to cut their heads off. And when the time comes for them to give up the keys to the kingdom, it's not going to be chopped up into little nation states. It's going to be one kingdom, and all these little nation states that think they have sovereign power we'll let them think they're still sovereign to some degree, but no, that's coming to an end. You know, they never were responsible. Here's the thing. You guys got to understand, we have epochs that only last 20,000 years, and we forget everything that happened the previous 20,000 years. And this goes on for millions and millions of years. What we're doing here is not just solving the problems here in the United States or here in the world or here in this time era. No, it's not just this epoch. We're shutting down 25 million years of crap that's been running amok. You know, you guys ought to understand, my enemies aren't human, okay? I'm fighting Draco. I'm fighting Gray. I'm fighting Anunnaki. My biggest fight right now is with Draco. Draco are who are running all this crap. All these humans that you think are in charge that are so scary, they're scared to hell of me because I don't even mess with them. I'm going right to their bosses, and they're seeing their bosses take big hits, and they are not knowing what to do. So once the bosses are wiped out, they'll be more than ready to hand over their power to the new power. Okay, this is how this works. It's not, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Okay? You got to remember that.
Yeah, well, I do think at the top we're dealing with non-human entities, and that's a complex and esoteric subject. But I personally think the problem with trying to enact any kind of one world anything is that different people like to live different ways. Different people like to have different customs, different ways to live. I think decentralization is going to be where it's at. And if that way everyone gets to have their little way they want to live. And if you don't like it, you can move over there and they can see how they live.
And you think I'm going to let the Chinese continue to eat dogs and cats? Oh, hell no.
The same way of being. I just don't think that's going to happen. Now, if Christ came back, that's a possibility. But, you know, I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
You remember when Christ was here? Nobody even realized it. What'd they say? What did they do? Even the apostles didn't recognize him. They go, when are you going to do something godlike? When are you going to do something really big like some supernatural stuff? And he say, can't you tell who I am by the things I say? They never got it. And then after he was gone, what'd they try to do? They tried to make him into something he wasn't. He was a human. He was a human. So you people think the angels and supernatural stuff is going to come down? What did Christ say? Christ says, I'm going to use your foot to crush the scorpions and the snakes, and they're not going to be able to do anything about it. And that's what we're doing. Now, you know, it's a fear thing. Humans have fear. Fear of losing their money, fear of losing their family, their reputation, whatever. Once you get over fear of death, once you get over that, you realize you can do anything and the enemy can't do anything to you. You can say anything, do anything, and if you get killed, it's because you're working for them.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've been waiting for them to kill me well over 20 years now, okay? I'm so over it. I wore body armor a whole year way back when, you know, just waiting for it. I'm over it. Do me a favor. You know, I don't plan on being here that long. You think, oh, people aren't going to do it. Guess what? Yes, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And you know what? When this goes down, all these people that think they're intelligent and functional, they're going to be on the ground, rolling around in a fetal position, going, what's because this is going to be so overwhelming. And this is why we try to spread out the pain teaspoon at a time. You know, and this is all I can do. You know, I mean, I'm here to try to save people. You know, the enemy wants to kill billions of people. And I know we can do this without having to kill billions of people. But they're doing it right now. They're trying to do it with the COVID and all this crap. You know, they're going to speed this through. And you're right. Things are going to change, and it's going to be hard. And a lot of people are still going to die. But we're going to try to minimize that as much as possible. And the pain is going to be awful, but we're going to try to make it as less as possible. That's all we can do.
Yes.
And if people don't want to go with the program, oh, well.
Okay, well, let's let Giuseppe jump in with a question or comment. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
I'm curious, Stephen, how are you fighting Draco? What's that about?
How do we fight Draco? Well, where do the Draco live? Where do they operate? Huh? We fight them in their backyard, in their home, in their living rooms, in their bedrooms. You know, they're not. You see, that's where I told you got to understand the nature of reality. Remember how Tesla said 369? It's all about 369. Okay. Well, that's part of it. There are 9 levels of reality or density. People say dimension. Dimension is BS. The dimension is not even a factor. It's density. We are on level 3 density. 1, 2, 3. Those are the levels we're on. Remember, 3, 6, 9. The enemy is operating in the levels above us, 4, 5, and 6. What we consider God is operating in 7, 8, 9. That's the Trinity. Hey, 7, 8, 9. So you got to understand all this stuff because the enemy isn't even working in this level of reality. He's coming down into our level of reality to mess with us. It's like when you're getting abducted, you're not getting abducted. They're not coming to you. They're taking your soul. You're not even going anywhere. Okay, these are all ratios of physicality versus spirituality. And this transition that we're moving up into is this 4D that people like to talk about, 5D. Yeah, we want to go to 5D. But the enemy is on 4D. They're trying to get us to go into 4D. That's the matrix. All right, no one understands this. That's your heaven and hell. Heaven is actually level 5. God is level 9. Jesus is level 8. That's his Holy Spirit, level 8. Jesus is level 7. You know, it's like when you go into astral, when you go into the your brain, the spirit world, when you're using DMT, whatever, you're going into the 4D. That's the 4D. That's where they are. So we can go in there, and we're, you know, there's, hell, the CIA's been doing this for a long time. The Russians have been doing this for a long time. All wars now are fought in this realm, okay? We have super soldiers. That's what I am. I'm one of those guys. But not all of them work for the government. Some of them are freelance. And a lot of the people that do work for the government, once they get a view of what's going on, they don't like it. And they come to work for people like me. And I have an army of these people, and I call them Jedi. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. And I have probably thousands of them now, and I recruit all the time. And I've learned how to recruit people to where they don't even have to have any talent or skill. I can use their soul and put you to work and put you to battle that night. And let me tell you something. We're in the middle of Beltane right now. You guys realize that? Well, Purges knocked. You know that's going on right now, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, May Day, the 29th, the 30th, the 1st.
That's right. Right.
This is a high holiday, a high satanic holiday. There is a lot of satanic murder going on right now. This is a very busy time for me. You know, I mean, my body is aching. I'm sore. I feel like I've been stabbed in the back or hit with a hatchet or something like that. This is what we go through. This is real, okay? And the tough guys of the world, they know it's real. They won't even, guys like Craig Sawyer, you know Craig Sawyer, Sawman Sawyer, thinks he's a big badass, guns and all this, Mr. Soldier guy running around. He was Hillary Clinton's bodyguard. I had it out with that guy, and I told him, we don't even use guns, dude. Here's my address. You know, let's tango. You know, give me your address. You know, nobody screws with me.
Yeah. Well, let's before we hit the top of the hour, let's jump into your work on the Getty Center, and because you know I've driven by that place, I've been there before, and
you can tell. Huh?
I have to say, it was a dark place. My intuition, my senses were really ringing off hard. There, I knew something was really off there, and maybe you could just sort of give the listeners an overview of what you see going on there and what it represents.
Well, of course, it's not the only underground, deep underground military base in the world. It's not the only place where they're murdering children and doing all this crap. There's what's his name, Philip, the guy that died here. That was, you know, I don't need to remember his name right now, but Schneider. Phil Schneider, he said they were creating one of these underground bases every 3 months.
And yeah, I think they're all over, though, connected. Yeah.
They're all connected. And there's your world government. I mean, there's no borders down there. But anyway, the point is that this particular facility like, it's not the only one, it's not the strongest, it's not the weakest, but it's the one that Destiny basically, no, not the Denver Airport's a huge one too, and but they've all got different jobs. Denver is about aviation. The Getty Center is like a Noah's Ark. Its purpose is to archive Western civilization. It's like a big vault. They have art there. They have all sorts of Western culture. They also have the Vatican Library. They've got the Great Library of Alexandria. They've got all kinds of crazy stuff there. But the thing is, though, is that Destiny shows that this is where we take them down. They have alien technology. They have Looking Glass, Project Looking Glass. Project Looking Glass actually stopped working in 2012, but from what they gathered from the information they got, they knew about me, they knew what was going to happen, they knew there was nothing they could do to stop this. They've been trying to stall this for 300 years, practically. They stretched time, they screw with time. They told me all about this time-messing technology, but the bottom line is that they don't know how we take them down. I know how we take them down, but they don't. They would like to know, and even if they did know, there's nothing they could do about it because this is inevitable. This is destiny. You can't stop it. And there's this thing in astrology called Grand Trine, and basically when you have someone that's going to do something that affects the entire world, you can't stop that. It's like the way time works is probability. Things are based on probability. The future is based on probability and cause and effect. And if you have something that is so probable, it goes above 90% probability, it's written in stone. You can't stop it. That's just the way the universe works. And this is why they can't stop me. So it's been a long time coming. But if you want to know what's under the Getty, that particular place, you should understand, first of all, that they use Nazi vril. Okay, you got to understand the Nazis, they were very heavily into the psychic and the astral and shit, and they had super soldiers too. They had what they called vril, V-R-I-L. Most of these were women, you know, long hair. Okay, the long hair helps you with the psychic stuff. Okay, well, anyway, that's sort of what I fight. One of the things I have to do, the first line of defense they had were these vril. They had like 200 of them on the first underground floor that we had to deal with. And then once you get past that, they had a big spa. We call it a spa. And it's a big decadent thing, you know, like a Roman bath type crap, you know, with little girls running around and slavery and all this BS. Okay, that's going on. And then under that, you've got a thing I call Hogwarts, which is like a big giant school where they train their vril. And this is where they keep the great library and all this information. And there's actually three levels to this. And as you graduate, if you graduate, you go to the lower level. And each one of these levels has like a wizard type person who thinks they're really badass that runs that level. Now, we've had to go through each one of these. I'm trying not to cuss here, but anyway.
Oh, you can say whatever you want. There's no.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, they all think they're bad. Okay. Let me just tell you this. They all think they're bad. Okay, they all think they're monsters. They all think you can't get past them, and we use Christ. It's Christ is what how we get past these things. Okay, but it's real easy. Anyway, after that, then you get into like a city, and the city is huge. It's like many levels, and it's like a bicycle wheel. It's like a big, huge atrium hole in the middle, and then you've got tunnels going out in every direction. And this is where they build all the structures inside of these tunnels, okay, like a bicycle wheel with spokes going out in every direction, okay, and then below that they've got the transit hub, and the Getty is a big transit hub. There's lots and lots of tunnels that connect to it, and Denver Airport, all these other things, they've all got tunnels connecting to them, but the Getty has got little tunnels. It's got big tunnels, little tunnels, all sorts of sizes, because people, you know, they always like to talk about children in tunnels you know, the stars walking around, celebrities in these tunnels and stuff, going to, like, the Playboy Mansion had tunnels and stuff. They all go to the Getty. All this stuff goes to the Getty. The Skirball Center, a big Jewish center down the street, has tunnels that go there. We identified a satanic thing in El Seno,
yeah, Encino, whatever it is. Encino, yeah. Right next to the reservoir. It was a big Hollywood thing. All the Hollywood comedians and everything would go there and do satanic rituals and shit. We busted those guys. They had to remove body parts and stuff from the back room. They were killing people. It's still there, but they had to fill in the tunnels with concrete. They had a house next door where with a tunnel entrance in the garage, and they had to fill that thing up with concrete. That house was listed under the name of some Netflix executive, but it was really belonged to this guy named Medina, Rick Medina. He was like the head wizard for these bastards. He was also like a talent manager for all the comedians like Rick Allen and Tim Carey and Janine Garofalo and people like that. You know, this is all satanic shit. Okay.
Well, okay. I mean, Stephen, we're almost at the top of the hour here. We got about 2 minutes, and I want to make sure you're available to stay for the third hour because I'd like to take calls if you can.
Yeah. Okay. Can I just throw this out real quick? Just for the purposes. My email law17gun@aol.com. You want healing, you want a copy of my book, you want to learn how to be a Jedi, you send me an email. You have any questions, you want to do interview, whatever, you want to get involved in this crap, send me an email to that.
Okay, right on, cool. And so yeah, we're going to we'll have you on for the third hour, and we're going to take some calls too, so I want everyone to out there that wants to call in with, you know, whatever viewpoint you might have, call in 703-873-7797. At 703-873-7797. And maybe Giuseppe could roll that number across the screen later. And we'll take some calls and just get some other ideas. I think, you know, we're on the same page about a lot of things, Stephen. This is really interesting. This, a lot of people want to poo-poo this underground world, but there's absolute proof it exists. Basically, there was an underground tunnel system from ancient times that was sort of tapped into and built over or through. And Mount Weather is an example of something that's actually admitted to exist. It's an entire underground city, complete with a post office, a shopping mall, the whole deal. So that's just one example of this whole network. And I think you're right. Once you get in this underground world, there is no national government. I mean, I think we already have a secret world government. It just hasn't been, you know, revealed to the general public as of yet. So truth really is stranger than fiction.
You got to go back to the time of the flood, because after, you know, they were doing all this eating babies and stuff right before the flood, and then after the flood, Nimrod brought it all back. If you remember Nimrod, well, they killed Nimrod, they sacrificed his butt, you know, that was like the son of Isis, all that crap. Well,
yeah,
it all went underground after that.
Right.
And it's still the same people, and it's still the same underground.
Yeah, good point. Giuseppe, how are we doing on time? I believe we're running up to the hour. Why don't you close us out?
Well, what I would say is this is really fascinating on the fringe stuff, and I look forward to hour three.
Okay, here we go. Great. Me too. And everyone stay tuned. Please call in. Let's get some callers here and see where it all goes. Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And in this hour, we're going to continue our conversation with Stephen and maybe even get even more esoteric, because one thing that I've learned when you deep dive into some of this information, truth really is stranger than fiction. And the reality of this underground tunnel system is all connected to so many different things, and I believe it to be true. I've done a lot of research on this over the years, and as I was saying before the top of the hour, Mount Weather is just one example of an actual underground city that the government admits exists, and I think it would be naive to think that's the only one. We'll just build one and we'll stop there. That'll be enough. It's much more deep and vast than that. And Giuseppe, why don't you kick things off here? Where do you want to take things as we begin? And I know we're going to take calls, so let me let's give out the number one more time. 703. Go ahead, sir. You do it. You do it better than I do.
703-606-7746. 703-606-7746. And then 703-606-7746. And
So it's a different number.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, my bad. Yeah. That's the wrong number. That's another number. 703-873-7797. 703-873-7797. 703-873-7797 is the correct Skype number.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
There we go. Sorry about that.
So and, where do you want to kick things off to, Giuseppe? Why don't you go ahead?
I'm really curious to see Stephen's thoughts on the stage of the battle against Draco, and you feel as though it's destined to end in victory. So what are the thumbnail achievements and thumbnail setbacks that you've experienced so far?
I guess achievements would be just starting this at all. I'll just give you an idea how it started. I always wanted to get a bunch of psychics together. I've been recruiting psychics for a long time. I used to be in a part of a group. It was a group of psychics called Poets, and there was like 600 people in that group, and it was international. But I always wanted to get a whole bunch of these people and go to the Getty, actually go there and stand around and do psychic battle with these Nazis underground. But I realized, you know, we didn't have to do that. We didn't have to go there. We could do it from our comfort of our homes, you know. And more of us started kind of working together and practicing and exploring this stuff and doing it. And there was a lot of frustration building up. And there's a lot of stuff I'm not telling you, but I'll try to get to that. But that's going to be way over your head, so I'm just going to start with this. One night,
I think we can handle it, Steve.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we'll get there. But one night in November, about 4 years ago, we had been working with some enemy-trained remote viewers, and we were going through like a negotiation with them. We were running around exploring, jumping through hoops, doing negotiation with these whatever it is you want to call down there, and basically telling them they just need to give up and, you know, see the light and Jesus Christ, all that sort of thing. And of course they resisted that. They looked upon us as terrorists, and they still do. They call us terrorists, but I got over that, and we all kind of snapped one night, and we all got called to battle. And that was the first night this ever happened. I only remember vague stuff. A lot of people remember vague stuff. But we went to battle and went underground and went through those doors and slaughtered anything that was there underground. And I can't really give you the details. I only say that it was a slaughter. And on the other side, it's not like what you think. Because on the other side, you're pretty much anything you want to be. Any size you want to be, you have anything you have, any skills that you have, you take with you. I have a lot of combat skills and weapons stuff going on, but, you know, that all came. But I also have an altar, apparently. This is something I found out a long time ago, and I've been working with this altar. And the altar I call Rambo. And Rambo sort of looks like me, but he's a stud. And he's all these things, but I, you know, you could poo-poo Rambo, whatever, but you don't want to meet Rambo. And Rambo kind of is running this stuff. He's like this uber warrior guy. If you ask me, we all work under Jesus. Jesus is the commander, but Rambo's kind of a general type of person. He pretty much tells people where to go and what to do. And I asked him why I can't remember anything, and basically says so I don't go crazy. Okay, so if everybody remembered everything that they were doing, the slaughtering, and I mean slaughtering, you know, I heard a little bit about what actually is used. There's everything from guns, a lot of edged weapons, to Chinese stuff, to martial arts, to ray guns and super, you know, futuristic type of stuff going on. As far as casualties, there was like one casualty, this first big battle, but you don't really die per se. You get hurt and you have to stop fighting, but you don't die. You wake up you know, because you don't die. They can't kill us. That's the beauty of this thing. They can't kill us in real life, and they can't kill us when we're fighting them. It's wonderful. And we have, this is the thing about being a human. Humans have these incredible powers, and they don't want you to know this. When we were created as hybrids way back when by these entities, these Anunnaki and such, they tried to take away our eighth chakra, which is that whole dome head thing. You had an eighth chakra up there, and it's that eighth chakra which gives you a connection to these higher level chakras that give you a connection to these higher level densities, etc. Well, we still have that. We have a virtual eighth chakra, and this is why we pinnacle this pyramid thing. The top of the pyramid, that's the tip, is the eighth chakra. And it, and the pyramid actually does go through, and it's the top of the pyramid, up this stuff up here, that's everything above the eighth chakra. That's this other density level, yada, yada. So we have the ability to communicate. Technically, we have a presence on all these levels of density. It's sort of like a nesting doll, if you will. You know, we have our foot in all of these things. But as even the angels have limitations, they can't be everywhere at once. They can be in one level, one density, one time, one era, one place. You can't be at two different times, at two different, you know, 1800 and 1700. You can't do that. The only one that can do that is maybe Jesus or the Holy Spirit. And this is why we work under them, because it helps us to fight these guys, because we don't have to. We can fight them on the moon. We can fight them on Nibiru. We can fight them under the Getty. We can fight them under K2. Ultimately, on Earth, I think the big battle is going to be under K2. And we're going to be dealing with Lilith. I think Lilith is the real entity that we have to deal with on Earth. It's not Lucifer. It's not Satan. They're somewhere else. But here on Earth, it's Lilith. And if you pay attention to all these Satanists, they're not worshiping Satan. They're worshiping Lilith. All this Starbucks cup, what do you think that is on the Starbucks cup? That's Lilith. What do you think when that stupid singer girl, Madonna, gets up and does all her nonsense? She's trying to be Lilith. It's all about Lilith. Nobody gets that. Your Isis, your even this, these holidays that we're going through right now with this sacrificial stuff where they're killing all the humans, they're not just killing babies. They're killing adult women, adult men. It's all part of this spring rite crap that they've been doing, Wicker Man type stuff, you know, Celtic nonsense. They've been doing this forever. It all goes back to Nimrod and Isis, his mother, and the Easter nonsense that they attached to Nimrod. So ultimately, everything we're doing goes back to Nimrod. The enemy that we're fighting now is connected to Nimrod.
Excuse me,
the
Steven.
The undergrounds are connected to Nimrod.
You have to mute your vocals because we're hearing I'm going to drop you for a while.
Yeah, just mute until we bring you on. Everyone that calls, just mute until we bring you on. But, Steven, why don't you briefly finish up and let's get the callers on.
The monitor system screwed up on this system. I'll turn it on really low, and I'll bring my microphone away from the monitor.
No, it's coming from a caller. It's
We've
not
got a couple callers, Steven.
So the first,
go ahead, Giuseppe.
First caller is the man, the myth, the legend. The first caller to speak free radio ever is none other than Paul from California.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions. My first one will be, so, sir, let me ask you a question. If I pull up to, say, Klaus Schwab's house or Anthony Fauci's house or Bill Gates' house, and I got my little portable guillotine on the trailer I'm pulling behind my Chevy truck, and I'm fixing to cut their heads off, are you saying that you're going to stop me? Because earlier in the show you said your job is to stop the guys who want to cut their heads off for some reason.
I'm going to try to persuade
you. My
job is not to protect what they're doing.
I'm just curious.
Okay, first of all, I don't condone and protect the thing, but here's the thing. They work for Satan. Satan would love nothing more than for you to go cut their heads off. He'd think that's great. That's like the Sith thing. You got to be a Sith. You want to raise up a Sith. You got to kill your master. No, this is if we are going to elevate as humans and stop being the savage animals that they think we are, we're going to have to learn to stop feeding their master with blood, and that includes the blood of our enemies. Now, that's what FEMA camps are for. You can lock them up. We don't need them reproducing. We don't need them communicating. We don't need them doing anything. But even Gordon Getty, who I think is a monster, basically my terms for him is, if you give up right now, I'll let you have a piano in your cell and maybe some artwork. But that's it. So we'll be nice. We're not going to be like them.
Well,
but it's got to come to an end.
I just detect the slightest.
Your desire for revenge and blood is mob nonsense.
You don't believe, in blood or slaughter. And on the other hand, you just got done telling us that you went on some underground base raid where you slaughtered or you were involved in the slaughter of all kinds of people. So
I didn't say people. I said, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I said Vril. I said entities. I said Draco, Anunnaki, Gray. I'll kill Gray all day, and I won't have any remorse because I am a surgeon removing cancer. Okay? If you have a toe that's gangrene and it's going to kill you, I'm going to cut that toe off, and I'm not going to cry over that toe because I'm trying to save you. Just like I'm trying to save humanity by removing the anti-human element. Now, I don't have to kill them, but I'm going to stop them.
What about the idea that many of these entities, these people that are supposedly in power, are actually not human beings? They just appear human.
Good question. All right. Yeah. I personally have dealt with at least two of these. Okay, I write about them in my book. One was named Tom Hansen. The other guy's name was Vince. Vince was a nice guy. I liked Vince. Vince is the guy that told me the word cavers. He said that they called themselves cavers. He wasn't one of those underground people. Vince, or Tom, on the other hand, he was a creep, but he was a damn reptoid. They were both reptoids. They were shape-shifting reptoids. Now, when they're in their human form, they're human. Okay? So if you're human, you're human, you're human, you're human. Jew, whatever, black, da-da-da, human. You're human, you're human. God, we all love humans. We're going to protect humans. But if you're a reptoid, then that's different.
Okay. Well, let's let Paul continue. Go ahead with your thesis.
Scorpio. Paul, stay on the line. We've got two other callers. Let's go to area code 401 now. Tell us your name and where you're calling from and what's your statement or question for Steven. Okay, let's move on to 818. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Is this Amanda? How are you?
Yeah, this is Amanda. Hi, guys.
Hey, Amanda. How are you? Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. It's nice to finally see Steven on your show, The Forbidden Guest. I love it. I think it's a great kickoff to your show, Scorpio, because these are topics not for the weak mind. I'm looking at the chat, and people are kind of, you know, a little bewildered over the esoteric stuff. But my question to Steven is, I understand, you know, the different levels that you speak of, but what about dealing with these reptilian types in person? I've personally encountered a few myself.
Uh-huh.
And there is an energy on this realm, this earthly realm, that is just unsettling. So what is your recommendation, or what do you, how do you deal with that on the human realm?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
This is easy. This is actually really easy. And you have to understand, these guys are going to be around you all the time. And what they do is they feed on your louche. And your louche, L-O-O-S-H, that's their word, not mine, is actually human emotional negative psychic energy. Okay, so you humans put this out. They want you to put this out. They're going to be provoking you all the time to get you angry, sad, despair, lonely, heartbroken, whatever. All these bad feelings produce energy that they just feed on. Okay, so these higher level entities, like fourth density, have a nutritional requirement that's spiritual. They have a physical nutritional requirement and a spiritual physical requirement because they are a high level. A lot of their proportion of their energy is going to be spiritual. So So they have to feed on this, and that's where we come in. That's a lot of people talk about adrenochrome. Adrenochrome is like a physical embodiment of louche. Okay, so when you hear these people collecting adrenochrome, what they're doing is they're emulating these guys, and they're collecting this stuff because it's like the 3D level embodiment of this 4D stuff that's actually very valuable in the rest of the universe. They sell this stuff everywhere. So when you're dealing with these entities, you got to understand that their primary objective is to collect louche from you, okay? Whatever it is. So if you're a person that's already full of it, full of hatred, full of all this nonsense, that's probably why they're there, because they're sucking it up like vampires. Okay, that's what they are. These are vampires, and that's what they live on. So you will run into them in places where you're going to find people with louche, like bars. Bars are a great place for that because people go there because they're feeling bad, they've got despair, whatever, they're going to drink their sorrows. They'll go there and feed on that. So you might run into one at a bar, and you're thinking, okay, there's something wrong with this guy or girl or whatever the hell. The way to deal with that is love. Love is poison to them. It's the exact opposite of what they came to feed on. So you look at them with compassion, and you say in your head, because this is how they're going to hear this, you say, I see you, I know what you are, but guess what? I love you. I have no hatred for you. I have compassion for you. Deal with it. You also have no power over me. I'm going to watch you now. You know, they're going to, watch them. They're going to freak out.
Steven, how do you identify the reptilians? Like, do you feel something? Do you see something in their eyes? I mean, because like with me, I feel it only happened really one time to me.
I'll just tell you this.
I felt like this insane heart palpitation type thing. What do you feel?
I'll just tell you this. I'm just as human as anybody else. So I'm just as susceptible as some nice person coming along and taking advantage of me as the next person. And I've done, and because, you don't understand, to be part of this movement, to be on the good side, you have to be service to others. This is what it's all about. The universe is divided into two sides, service to self and service to others. Service to others people are going to be looking for people to serve, and the people that they are primarily going to be serving are people that are looking to be served, such as the service to others people. So your reptoids and these bad guys, those are service to self entities. Okay, so they're going to be looking for service to others types to feed upon. That's only normal. So in other words, someone can come up to you being all needy and what have you, trying to take advantage of you, playing you, being all nice. You're going to be a nice person. You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and you might even fall into their trap, and you might figure it out sooner or later, but no, you're not going to see them walking up to you and go, oh, I'm going to avoid that because I know that's a trap right away. No, you don't do that. That's like Christ and the lepers, or Christ. Christ used to hang out with Pharisees all the time, having dinner with these guys. He says, oh, come to my house and have a grand dinner. And they would have whores, and hookers would come in and do all these things. And he would do everything. The Pharisees would do everything they could to try to corrupt him. It didn't work. So it's like, yeah, you can move about criminals and thieves and lowlife and what have you. No problem. You need to do that anyway because that's part of your mission. You need to be spreading the word and saving these people. So here's the thing about the enemy, and here's the thing about the truth. The truth is a weapon. It's a sword that cuts in two directions. So if the enemy is trying to use something against you, you take that very same information, and you cut him back with it. Because it's like, you got people tapping your phones? Great. That means they're listening to you. You got an enemy in front of your face? Make them listen to you. Okay? And here's another thing. We are so powerful, especially when you become psychic. The thing about being psychic is you become influential. That's your biggest gift right away. And that's scary as hell, because what enemy is going to send up their droids against you when you're just going to influence them and turn them to your side? And I do that all the time. Both those reptoids that I mentioned earlier work for me now. Okay? One of them was cast in the lake of fire, and he's out. Okay, because that's not eternal. Eternal is not what you think it is. It's only like a year or two. But he's out. He works for me now. The other reptoid, they killed him. They gave him a heart attack because he said too much. He told me too much. They took him out. They gave him a heart attack in New York City. He was a young guy.
Well, I guess the question of the hour is, what approach do we take? Do we take the mobile guillotine approach or love approach? You're like the Mahatma Gandhi spiritual warrior against the reptoids, maybe. So that's an interesting point of view. And
what'd you expect Jesus was going to be like? You know, come on, think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still Jesus, but he's a warrior. He's a king. He's going to come back. He's going to kick ass. It's not, you know, right? Come on, right? You guys think he's going to come, turn the other cheek? No. It's time to spank everybody.
Spiritually instead of with guillotines.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Giuseppe, what are your thoughts?
If they resist, you know, you could, this whole death penalty thing and all that, okay, we're going to punish you. The whole concept of punishment is satanic, all right? The court system, the entire court system, legal system, is based on satanic nonsense. That's all got to go away. Solomon, this whole Solomonic type of justice crap, that's satanic. That's all got to go away. So it's hard for us to comprehend how it's going to be. But the easiest way to say it's going to be loving. People say good and evil. What's good? What's evil? Okay, there's no such thing as good and evil. It's all gray. It's all ever-changing shades of gray. That's what the yin and yang is. It's not black and white. It's ratios of black and white. And evil is not evil. It's just not loving.
If we were sitting in the bar that you mentioned earlier, you know, I don't have any ill will towards somebody like you or no hard feelings at all. In fact, you're entertaining. This has been a very interesting and entertaining show, and you say a lot of things that are true. There's no doubt about it. But I got to tell you, if I'm sitting on a bar stool next to you, sooner or later I'm just going to go, dude, you're full of it. You're delusional. You never went to an underground base.
Dude. I never said I didn't. First of all, if you were in a bar stool next to me, you wouldn't have any control over yourself.
And I don't have a Chevy truck either. You know, we have to distinguish between fantasy and reality. You're an interesting guy. Okay?
All right, look, I'll give you a challenge. Come to the damn bar and meet me. All right, every Thursday night I will be at BJ's in La Puente, okay? You come and meet me there, and you see what it's like.
Gentlemen, hey.
Let's talk one at a time. We can't talk over each other.
Seriously. I'm very impatient. You're going to challenge me. I'm going to cut your fucking feet off immediately. And, dude, you want I run into people like you all the time that talk this shit. Come on. You come into a bar. You watch what happens. You'll be kissing my ass just like everybody else in the whole bar, dude. If you were in jail with me, you know what would be happening? You'd be kissing my ass because you don't know what it's like. It's easy for you to talk over the phone. No, it doesn't matter, man. Just come to me in real life. I can say you can't kill me. I'm offering you the chance to prove that you're a man. Come and try to kill me, dude. See what happens to you.
Okay? Paul,
if I tell you I'm going to be king of the earth, I'm going to reel over all of you like a bunch of stupid sheep. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter. I'm already doing it.
Okay, let's let Paul respond. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, I said what I said.
You can all have your opinion. It doesn't matter.
Let's not talk over each other, though. Please.
But the bottom line is this guy, Steven, you know, he has no idea whether there's big tunnels or small tunnels. And he doesn't know where they go. He's full of it.
Oh, my God. Where's this guy? Is this guy a troll? You have trolls on your show, dude. You're so full of shit. You're so full of shit. Oh, my God. You are so full of shit. You don't know crap, man. You're just spewing shit. It's like, dude, I'll give you my fucking address, and you can come over and show me how studly you are. You don't have a clue. I'll tell you where I am. Why don't you give me your name and your address if you're so manly? Come on.
Wait, we're talking.
Come on. Okay, this is a man. This is a pissing contest.
Everybody. Let's take a breath, everybody. Let's take a breath.
You want to have a pissing contest? Yeah, let's trade addresses, fool.
Let's take a let's
Carry
take a
in.
I
think
yeah, let's everybody step here. Back. Let's all okay. Amanda, go ahead. Amanda, go ahead.
Wait.
I want to.
Let's let Amanda talk.
Paul, please stop for a second. Paul, listen. How can you say anything that is not true from Steven's point of view when you're a total fucking racist, Paul? Okay. How do I say anything serious that you say, Paul, when you're a total racist?
I am a racist, and that doesn't mean
that's like being an animal.
Here's my answer to your question. When you ask me how do I know, I'll be honest.
Why do you think they eat your children?
But I'm a gambling man, and I'll put all my money on it. How's that?
Dude, you don't really want this on your show. Trust me, it'd be better if you just stopped it and we went forward and talked about more stuff.
In the woods, that I would take him down, and he would be eating grass. I would stuff grass.
Blah, blah, blah. You can fill the rest of your show with that.
Everybody, let's stop right now, and let's we got a couple of callers.
Push the button and just, yeah.
No.
Push the button.
We let everyone speak their mind. I don't have to agree with everybody.
For how long?
But let's
give them 5 minutes and cut them off.
Okay? Let's get some other points of view.
Area code 310, tell us your name and where you're calling from, and go ahead.
Hi, it's Padgett from California.
Hey, Padgett.
Oh, hey, Padgett. Hey, it was great to meet you last week. We had a fantastic meeting at your place, and met a lot of really good people, and I appreciate your efforts. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and we were talking about a lot of esoteric things. Well, I just wanted to say, I think Paul was your caller. To some people, this is a little different to understand because it doesn't work in the linear A going to B going to Z kind of way. And I have experience where physically I am in like a treatment room because I am an acupuncturist, but another part of my consciousness goes somewhere else and I'm dealing with a battle that's taking place for this person that isn't like what we would call 3D or 3 density. And in taking care of that other battle, it helps the person to do better. Because you can see when someone walks in, if there's something with them or if there's like some battle going on with a part of their soul because it reflects through their eyes. So I just wanted to say, if you're not of a frequency to understand this, just accept that you just don't understand it rather than like yelling at someone and telling them that they're wrong. You know? It's like...
I understand it.
All right. Yeah. Can I respond?
I'm talking about Paul.
There's two parts to this.
Let's let Padgett finish up, and then we'll let Stephen jump in. Padgett, go ahead and finish your thoughts, please.
Oh, well, that's all. And I'm right on this same page. I do my battle with the Draco and other opponents through Pinky Rose Love. And one thing that they can't stand is when I stand there and I picture the Pinky Rose inside of them and I hold it. And, like, they get so uncomfortable, they don't want to be around it. So, anyway.
Sounds about right. I just want to say one thing. Being an acupuncturist, okay, I'm a Reiki master. I'm certified Lomi-Lomi, acupressure, and Reiki. I'm Reiki level 6. Okay, so
wow.
A lot of, I know. A lot of people think that's hokey-pokey voodoo. But here's the thing. Even the major hospitals, some of the most prestigious hospitals like Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, are using Reiki. You could go in there for surgery right now, and there will be a Reiki master standing on the side of the surgery table doing Reiki. Now, I'm as a healer, I started doing mass production healing a couple years ago when I was on YouTube with the QAnon group. I had 30,000 people, and I would do healing, and I would do maybe up to 200 healings a day, 400 healings or so, a lot of them. And I did a little bit of everything. And I'm telling you, these are miracles, okay, real-life miracles. I had a girl that was dying of a lot of people were dying and that lived. One, she was 7% oxygen. Okay, she was having heart, lungs shut down. She had heart issues. She was shut down. She was going to die. She came back to 100%. At least three people, pneumonia, that's what it is. They had pneumonia. That's a killer, obviously. They were going to die. And I brought them back to 100% oxygen. One of them was a woman. She was on oxygen. She was 80. She was pretty old. But after I was done with her, when she left the hospital, she didn't even use an oxygen bottle after that. So I've cured a woman who had blindness. She had retinitis pigmentosa. And she had been worked on by at least 6 doctors in Houston working on her eyes, declared her blind. And I fixed her up, and she went back to 100%. Now, this is physically impossible, okay? When you have retinitis pigmentosa, that means your rods are dead. Okay, rods don't come back. I brought her rods back to 100%. This was verified by the doctors in her, that worked on her, and they basically came back and told her, "Oh, well, I guess you never were blind in the first place." You know, this is common.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah. Yep.
So that's all real, and that is in this density. Yep. So people are really powerful. We're really powerful, and even Christ told us, "Seek the spiritual gifts," and healing is one of the spiritual gifts. And we should all seek it out. And it's not of the devil. You know a tree by its fruit, right? Mm-hmm. But
let me interject.
Second part.
Okay.
The second part of the answer is when we did the initial search of the tunnels.
Okay.
Initially, years ago. We didn't even talk about this, okay? We didn't even go into how that happened. Just cut off the chatter. But we never told the enemy that we did this. Okay, we never told them. But the next day, they freaked out. The NSA handlers that we were dealing with freaked out. They wanted us cut off. They wanted us not having any connection whatsoever with this guy that was the trust fund manager. Now, remember, the guy that was the trust fund manager of the Getty, this is the guy that runs the checkbook for the Getty. Listen to this fool. It's like I'm like ex-CIA NSA. You don't know anyone in the world that's been actually worked for both agencies, I'll bet.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Listen,
I'm going to leave the interview if you don't remove this fool, okay? I'm just telling you right now, guys.
Well, what I want to do is I want to let Giuseppe jump in, and I think there might be some other callers.
Scorpio, Giuseppe, yeah. I'm going to walk away if you don't remove the fool from your call right now. I'll need some idiot giggling in the background, okay?
Well, he needs to mute when he's not talking.
No, he needs to go away. I'm serious. I've run radio calls before. It's like there's a red button. That's what it's for, okay?
Well, we don't have that. But
you don't do that? Okay, but I do. I do, though. I'm just telling you, if you want to have this interview, you need to delete that guy because I will go. Okay, well, I'm getting up to leave. Here's when you change your policy. It has been fun, guys.
Paul, it's been
a great interview. I'm just going to say, up until you, this idiot, it's been a really good interview, and I enjoyed being here.
Paul, you need to mute.
Okay.
Paul, mute yourself, okay? And let's take it away. Let's keep this going.
I'm going to go now, okay? It's been fun, and it's been real, but Paul, if you don't have any control over your callers, it's not a professional operation.
I dropped Paul. I mean,
you dropped Paul? Okay, we're good to go then.
Oh,
awesome. Okay.
All right. So let's go on to the Giuseppe.
We have another caller. We have Steve from UK. UK Steve, welcome, brother. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, guys. Pleasure to hear from you all. Couple of things. I mean, couple of things I disagree with guests. There's also a couple of things I want to explore. So I don't really agree that all nationalists are Satanists and stuff like that. I think the Jews are definitely Nazis, and it is the Jews, and especially serving certain entities. So rather than just focusing on the differences that we have and accusing nationalists of being Satanists, maybe we can talk about the Lilith factor. Can you explore and expand more to the audience on what your experiences with Lilith and combating Lilith in effective struggle? Can you do that?
Well, it's not really so much of a combating Lilith, because it's kind of like she's the mother of all these demons. You know, and people like to call aliens demons and demons aliens. If you go back to the history of Lilith, or the myth of Lilith, the story of Lilith, she was the original mother of all of these demons through her sex with Lucifer. And the angels came to put a stop to that, and it didn't work out. And God threw her into the ocean, and she became the sea monster, kind of the thing that you see on the cup from Starbucks with the two tails.
The sea hag.
When Adam and Eve were cast out of the garden, she was released from the depths, and she was allowed to run amok and become a succubus and run, you know, just do what she does. Now, understanding these levels of density, you have to understand that time isn't what we think it is. We have this linear perspective of time that might not necessarily coincide with how it really works or how it works for everybody else, but we try to apply it to our understanding of everything else. So you got to take that in consideration. So when we think about these, when was Lilith? When was the Garden of Eden? When were the dinosaurs? When were this? When was it? You know, the Bible likes us to think that it was within the last 10,000 years. No, I don't think so. So these things aren't always in the order that we associate them with. So as far as actually fighting Lilith, the entities that we're fighting are these anti-human entities. And basically, it took a long time to figure this out, but it's, if you, there were like 8,000 different entities out there in the universe. There's all kinds of them, different entities. The Draco and the Grey and the Anunnaki, they're just three. But they are the three that are the biggest dicks that ran amok on the Earth, that wiped everything else out, and decided to create these human hybrids to be their slaves. And basically, from what I've learned, is that those three actually were at war for some time. I mean, you have to understand why they do what they do, a lot of it, you need to really understand their interaction with each other. There was a treaty. And part of this treaty was that the Anunnaki would get Nibiru, the Grey would get the moon, and the Reptoid would get the Earth. And there were still rules. And one of those rules was that the Reptoid would not be allowed to use portals to bring more Reptoids to the Earth. Now, the Reptoids are using portals. I know of 6 or 7 portals at the Getty. CERN is a portal. Fukushima was a portal.
When they got blown up.
This is why we are at war, because God basically made a treaty with these entities and said, all right, I'm going to let you survive and I'm let you continue with your stuff, but I'm going to give you rules. And they violated those rules. They violated the treaty. So guess what? Their little hybrid human creations, which are us, get to wipe them out for all time and all eternity. And that's what this is all about.
Right. So, and, you know, I like Steve's approach here to this. Go ahead, Steve. Please continue.
One more question. Can I ask him a question?
Absolutely.
The Orthodox Church tends to see Satanism as Sethanism, the crocodile god, the god of mercantilists, foreigners, and lizards, funny enough. Do you have a position on Sethanism, or maybe the Temple of Seth, for example, the Temple of them? Do you have a
negative,
on
negative.
Them relation to the
bad, bad. All, okay, any of this Egyptian base, I mean, I'll give you this. If you want to know the truth, if you want to know real history, study what the Egyptians have to say. But as far as this Thoth and Temple of Seth and Law of One and Ra and all this crap, no, that's Satanism. And often it will masquerade as something else. It just doesn't work.
Well, they were equating the Orthodox Christian Sethanism with Satanism. That's the origin of it. Hence, Khazaria, for example, they have knowledge of the Jew because they decided to adopt Seth and Satan.
Well, we could talk about Khazaria if
you want. Yeah, I mean, I was just curious. As to the position.
I did a whole video on Khazaria, about 1,000-year history of Khazaria.
Self-worship, as you put it. How that sort of carried forth within Judaism, perhaps.
You guys want to talk about Solomon? By any chance, King Solomon?
Well, let's see. Do we have any more callers? I want to make sure everyone that called gets a chance to chime in.
Take a look at the list here. And 401, did we get to you? You called a few times. Are you on 401? Don't hear. I think everybody else. We got the Paget. We got the Amanda, of course. And I think we're good, Scorpio. 401, for some reason, they keep calling, but I never hear them speak. So,
well, if you, we could, we've got about 15 minutes left, Stephen. And, you know, Solomon is interesting story. And, you know, it's interesting how the Freemasons are obsessed with rebuilding Solomon's temple. And, you know, the other day I was at this meeting with some very interesting people at a hotel, and we accidentally bumped into this Freemason guy, and you know, my girlfriend started talking to him, and what's that ring? I've never seen a ring like that. You know, playing dumb, right? Not acting like she didn't have any idea. And you know, this guy exuded evil from him, and it was incredible. And the ring actually had some kind of dark aura around it. It was really strange. And I gave him the line, "Is there no help for a widow's son?" He really didn't know what to do at that point.
Well, you know,
so anyway, go ahead.
You got to learn their secret passwords, man. That's how you really blow them away.
Yeah.
There's different secret passwords.
That's right.
Okay, first of all,
Are you a traveler?
No. Masons are bad, but it wasn't up until 17 whatever when Meyer and Frank and Weishaupt got together and took over the Masons. Masons were around a lot longer than those guys. They used the Masons as a cover for this, you could call it Zionism. It's really Satanism. But if you look at like the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, it was supposedly written by Albert Pike during the time of the Civil War. They talk a lot about the Masons, and they use that word to hide the Jewishness of it, the Zionistness of it. Those aren't even really good words. Because to really understand it, you do got to go back to the Temple of Solomon, you know, and here's the thing. And
can I comment that, please?
Well, we should talk about Solomon first, I think, huh?
Well, go ahead, do the Solomon, and then Steve, why don't wait a minute? Let Stephen Kelly finish, and then you can jump in, UK.
Well, I'm just going to say that even the Jews have to admit, Solomon worshipped Moloch. He had Phoenician girlfriends. He had girlfriends from all over the place, Babylon, what have you. He did everything. He was well known. His control was based on his ability to control the power of demons. I mean, this is all what it's about, the Kabbalah and all this. It's negatives. It's supposedly using the power of Satan for good. This is what they're going to try to suggest, and this is what Solomon was all about. Anyway, these are the same people, basically. And that's your Khazarians. Your Khazarians are most closely connected to what's left of the kingdom of Solomon.
Go ahead, UK Steve.
I think on that last point there, you're quite correct in terms of the esoteric tradition coming from the Hyksos. But what I wanted to point to, Scorpio, was Giuseppe, was Charles Juliani's position that Solomon was Imhotep, that David was Tutmosis, and Akhenaten was Moses. Now, if you take that overlay and you compare the text, both biblical and apocryphal, I kind of more pushed the view that the Sumerian influence from Mesopotamia was pushing into the Nile Delta, another fertile area, but combining it with gold and precious metals. And one of the reasons we see the Hyksos coming into Egypt with Imhotep, I think he was a commoner under Djoser and built the Bent Pyramid. When you see this migration and subsequent migrations of Hyksos, they bring sun worship, Ra in a way, and they depose the old Ptah or the creator god, and they move to a gold currency with very Sumerian aspects. So perhaps a lot of the behaviors and traditions and rituals are actually being imported, and the Sumerians didn't really sort of disappear. They moved into a richer host.
But Stephen,
they moved on to a more nutritious host.
Stephen, you got to talk about the ones they don't talk about. The Phoenicians are the ones. The Phoenicians were there first. During the settlement of the Fertile Crescent, it started with the Phoenicians. And you got to remember, Israel never had a navy. There was
are you talking specifically?
Well, if you go back to the beginning, it's Phoenicians. They were the original Semites, the Phoenicians.
Yes.
And in Lebanon.
That's the conclusion Eustace Mullins came to as well. Steve, go ahead. What were you saying?
No, I'm just saying Lebanon was essentially Phoenicia, just as Carthage. Their political system was set up. There was no central government. They were like nation states. That's why nobody really talks about them. Carthage was Phoenicia. But the Lebanese influence, Phoenician Lebanese. In other words, if there's human sacrifice going on in Phoenicia, and this is right next door to Solomon's kingdom, and Solomon's allowing it, he was connected to it. So yeah, it was the Phoenicians that took the Jews to Spain, and you know all that. All those Jews all over the Mediterranean, they came from Phoenicia.
Apparently, naval admiralty law, the Phoenicians are the red-haired enforcers of the precious metals trade, whereas the harbour master was the Pharisee, as you put, in the harbour. And it seems to me that the Freemason and the Jew seem to have this relationship where the Jew issues the money of usury, and pays the Freemason to peddle every form or brand or flavor, as you put it, of Satanism.
Well, that's Templar stuff.
But worshiping the creator gods, obviously.
Here's something that's really important you have to understand. The role of the Templars during the Crusades and this whole Da Vinci Code nonsense, I mean, there's a lot to that stuff. Okay, Da Vinci Code is kind of pretty accurate, actually. The people that I dealt with at the Getty are Templars. They're Templars. The guy that was going through, the guy that was the trust fund manager, he had to become a Templar. He had to go to Malta. He had to kiss the head of John the Baptist. He had to do all this crap. And once they become Templars, then they become indoctrinated into this Greco-Egyptian Roman mythology crap. They start worshiping Zeus and think they're all Olympians. Okay, so it's very incestuous when you start talking about Egyptian mythology, and it's all the same thing, basically.
Well, can I just make one point there, just an important point? There was a subtle change in terms of spiritual fruit. So when you stop worshipping the creator and you start worshipping a flaming ball of gas in the sky, plasma, hot plasma, it removes the psychic assemblage point into the material realm, the realm of the here and now, of enjoying the sunshine. It takes us away from the creator of all reality, which originally was the focus.
I have to address the whole sun thing now.
The Egyptian belief, and I believe it's a Sumerian influence which has changed it to sun worship, and they're trying to construct an inner.
This is today's an eclipse. You guys know today's an eclipse, right?
Philosophy, like the Frankist.
Today's a solar eclipse. It actually started here at 12 o'clock, 2 hours ago. You don't go outside in a solar eclipse. Here's the reason why. The sun is matter. It's the largest amount of matter close to us. Everything's about matter. Matter transmits energy. It puts out information. Energy is information. God is information. Scalar is information. Information is what tells us what to do, tells our cells how to divide, etc., etc. The reason why they worship the sun is because this is where the information was coming from, or the next big body. Some people think Saturn is a satanic, yada, yada. But there is something to that.
Absolutely.
And God, every bit of creation, every bit of matter is God. It's part of God. It all came from God. It all came from creation. It's all part of creation. So these big parts of matter, and not just the big ones, but even the little ones in your body, your cells, your atoms, are all resonating and putting out information. But yes, the bigger the ball, the more resonating, the more information coming out. And this is why the sun puts out so much damn information. This is why the planets grow, because it tells them to.
And there is something to the Saturnian idea here, because that's why the ring of Saturn is in so many logos in corporate America. And I believe Amanda had an additional question for you. Amanda, go ahead, please.
Yes, Stephen, you mentioned people emailing you to become a Jedi, but I guess the short version, I want to know, what are the spiritual methods that you use to fight these demons?
Spiritual method? Well, so, you're a soldier. You just follow orders. You do what you're told.
I'm wondering what you do.
Whatever you're told. It's really simple. I don't really. This is why I don't want to know about it, because I don't really want to have a tally in my head of how many demons got their heads cut off or slashed up or whatever the hell. All I know is it's very violent. There's two phases. There's a negotiation and there's violence, and we're past the negotiation. Okay. I'll tell you one thing. I saw Gordon Getty the other night. He wasn't too comfortable, but I don't remember anything. But no, to sign up to be a Jedi, basically it's very simple. I mean, first of all, you have to understand that that's forever, okay? This is your soul running off and doing battle for Jesus, and it's forever. It's forever. When I say forever, I mean forever, okay? You get your name written on a wall in heaven, that's all you get. you get no love, you get no thanks, you get no pat on the back, but you get to do a really important job. And it's really simple. You just got to want to do it, and you have to be thankful for being allowed to do it.
Okay, did you have a final comment, Amanda? Because we're down to about 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
I just want to say that I appreciate even all the shit talking in the chat room, and you've got a racist in there, that 25-cent guy, and just people that don't understand the esoteric side. So I just want to let you know, Stephen, that I appreciate your work and your energy, and you have somebody over here.
I wasn't always esoteric. I used to be a gun guy. Okay, I used to be world famous for weapons. I made the world's most accurate laser aiming system. The CIA, NSA, all the Western powers, NATO, they all used my stuff. They only used my stuff. Nobody, to this day, nobody can make anything as good as the stuff I made. They came to me. They didn't just come to me for... They asked me how to fight aliens and crap like that, okay? That's where all this esoteric stuff comes from, because your guns are worthless fighting these aliens. You got to go into the esoteric. That's what you learn the hard way.
Well, yeah, there's multiple layers of this, no question. And Giuseppe, why don't you give us your final thoughts? We're down to the last couple minutes, literally. Go ahead, please.
Well, this has been a fascinating show, Scorpio. Stephen Kelly brought many layers of esoteric insight and opinion, and it was true free speech. You know, it got a little salty there, but that's what free speech is all about, and I'm glad. Thanks, Stephen, for his coming on the show a couple hours, and been following his work for many years, and we'll continue to follow it and wish him all the best.
You guys have fun.
Absolutely. And I'd like to thank you too. And you know, it's not about agreeing with everybody all the time. I don't think that's the point. The point is to have different points of view and to try to come together in building a new reality, because this reality that we know is being deconstructed, like it or not, and the new system they intend to impose upon humanity ain't going to be too pretty.
It'll be different.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We have to create our own. We can't sit back and let them.
Exactly. We create our own. Screw what their plans are. Focus on your own plans. You know? Have your own plan. I have my plan.
Don't take the devil's coin.
Don't take the devil's coin. That's a good one. Steve, thank you.
Yeah, well, I use PayPal. If you want to send money to my PayPal, it's Stephen Kelly, stephenkelly74@yahoo.com. Had to get that out. You know. Otherwise, I live in poverty, okay?
We're down to the final moment. What's...